ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling, OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
The Beast, the Man.
You gotta beat the Man.
Woo! It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
Hey, this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it? It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God!
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Welcome, everybody, to Online World of Wrestling Radio, Rooks with a Wild Talk Radio Network. Our phone number, if you wish to call in at any time from now till I stop running out of stuff to talk about, is 267-297-1397. Our 800 number has gone on vacation. We think to Cabo to visit Sammy Hagar at Cabo Wabo. We're not 100% sure. We do have Skype available for you. If you Skype, you can Skype Sir Rockin', which is two words, not one. If you're here for wrestling chat, stay tuned with us, because in the 10 o'clock hour, we will have former TNA Knockout and current Women's Superstars Uncensored performer, Nikki Rock, who will be here to talk about her event this weekend in Danella, New Jersey. After her, he was supposed to be here 2 weeks ago, but due to travel issues, couldn't make it. Lance Hoyt, the former Vance Archer, will be joining us on the show. We will talk TNA wrestling, including the pay-per-view that just happened this Sunday, a puzzling release by that company. We'll get into the stuff that happened on Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, the release of one of our personal favorite superstars on here. But first, we're going to unfortunately talk about a passing. We're all about the legends and the present here as well. King Curtis Iaukea, who was a legend in the Hawaiian wrestling community and a huge star in the 60s and 70s, passed away in Honolulu this past week. Unfortunately, we don't have any other details other than he had passed away at home with his wife and two daughters. He was a 300-pound football star at the University of California and headlined virtually everywhere around the world as long as his career was involved, including matches with Mark Lewin in a number of promotions. He was a mentor to many in the wrestling business and was considered to be one of the best interviewers in the business. He passed away at the age of 73. If you're wondering, dude, why are you playing Rob Van Dam's old ECW music? Because, first off, let me just say, if you had any family members who are of an older generation, today to them is their 9/11, and that would be December 7th regarding to 1941, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. Which, if you know anyone that was in the military at that point, my grandfather served in World War II, and that was one of the things that got him drafted. So thank someone from the baby boom generation, because you're here because of them. The other thing that's sad is how we're going to open this show tonight, because if you're a music fan, tomorrow is the worst day of your life, and it's for two different reasons. One is because on December 8th, 1980, before some of us may have been born, I was six at the time, one of the founding fathers of rock and roll, John Lennon, was gunned down outside his home, the Dakota, in Manhattan, New York, near Central Park. And we already played Beatles music earlier in the year, so we didn't want to do that. However, December 8th is an even worse day for fans of the band Pantera, and some of them also became fans of a side project the group did called Damage Plan. For fans that don't know, Pantera was started in the early 80s by the Abbott brothers, Vinnie Paul and Dimebag Darrell. They actually started as a glam rock band, which was pretty amazing when you hear some of their later stuff, like we heard Cowboys from Hell from their debut album, which is actually in a re-release in a 3-CD set, which you can buy through Pantera.com. Up until 2000, the band consisted of vocalist Phil Anselmo, bassist Rex Brown, and as mentioned, Vinnie Paul on the drums and Dimebag Darrell on the guitars. And we were hoping to have Spug here with us. Mace will be joining us later on. I believe he's in a World of Warcraft fest, and we'll try to get him away from that. December 8th, Spug actually had tickets to go see Damage Plan on their tour. They played the Ella Rosa Villa in Columbus, Ohio. Damage Plan at that point consisted of Vinnie Paul on drums, vocalist Pat Lockman, and bassist Bob Zilla. And unfortunately, less than a minute into the first song of their set, a former military member named Nathan Gale, age 25, stormed on stage and shot Darrell Abbott multiple times in the head. He also killed Nathan Bray, a 23-year-old fan, Aaron Hawk, a 29-year-old club employee, and Pantera security official Jeff Mayhem Thompson, who was age 40. Longtime Damage Plan and Pantera drum tech John Cat Brooks was injured trying to save Darrell Abbott's life. Damage Plan tour manager Chris Pugh was also shot dead. Unfortunately, Gale never got to serve time for these because police officer James Niggemeier, unfortunate last name there, was the first responding officer of 8 that night with a 3-minute response time. Wish you could have that in certain crimes. Took down Gale with one gunshot from his shotgun. Many wrestlers, including Rob Van Dam, used Pantera for their music. I know Chaos, a friend of our network, the Subway guy who was here last week for Joe Pierce Memorial Cup night, knew Chaos, and Chaos used to come out to Walk by Pantera, which I thought was pretty cool. We will be playing Pantera music during the evening. Was thinking of doing some Damage Plan, but I just figured we'd stick with that. One of my friends was very influenced by the band, and him and his partner in crime in a very popular Southeast band in the United States called Screaming at the Silence are joining us. Mike Liguori is the lead singer of the band. He's also a diehard wrestling fan. And Stu Wired, who runs their Facebook and MySpace pages, are also joining us. To you first, Mike, when did you first even know of Pantera, and how much did this group influence the sound that is Screaming at the Silence?
Be quite honest, I didn't really start listening to Pantera until Damage Plan came out, but everything I heard was just absolutely amazing, from Phil Anselmo's vocal to anything and everything Dimebag does on the guitar. Stu's the one who's the major Dimebag influence when it comes to his guitar playing.
Stu, you're one of the instrumentalists in the group. Same question to you. Were you a fan of Pantera's growing up, and any influence did Darrell and Vinnie Paul have on your deciding to be involved in music?
I definitely listened, and I want to say I listened to Pantera probably in my early, like, freshman year, sophomore year of high school and stuff. My older brother showed it to me. And it was probably one of the more hardcore bands I heard, at first, you know, like when I first started really getting into metal in high school. And I never heard anybody play guitar like Dimebag, though. I started watching videos, just watching what he does on a, you know, a tremolo and stuff. And definitely amazing. It was even more, shocking, you know, the way that he got killed, you know, that was pretty terrible. I don't understand why anybody. That's what I really wanted to know is why he did that.
There's apparently reports that came out that Nathan Gale was a distraught fan who couldn't handle that Pantera stopped doing music. At least if you watch the VH1 very well done behind the music video series, I think you can find it through VH1.com. It's actually supposed to air tomorrow a couple times on either VH1 or VH1 Classic. So if you're wondering, who is this band and why are they talking about them, you'll understand why, because I knew them from when I went to St. John's University. I was a part of WSJU, which is a campus radio station, and Cowboys from Hell was played like crazy by our hard rock and metal guys, and I just don't know, okay, what are you guys listening to? There's this stuff called grunge going on, and next thing I know, I heard this sound, and I was just like, holy God, this guy's amazing. We tried to have World Japan and NWA Florida star Steve Madison on. I know he is a very huge Dimebag Darrell fan. The winner of the 2010 Joe Peterson Memorial Cup, which we'll talk about later, Sammy Callahan, who worked for Combat Zone Wrestling, also wanted to send his memories of the band. He was a big Pantera, Damage Plan fan. How much does it influence to Mike and then over to Stu in your... Does the band or other bands like Pantera influence the Screaming at the Silence sound, or is it not there at all when you're sitting there with a pen and a pad ready to write?
Actually, it does a lot more now. Because we've changed up our sound quite a bit to add a little bit more of a southern flair to it.
And once again, if you do wish to call in, it's 267-297-1397. This is On Willow Wrestling Radio, and I'm sorry we're opening with a different tip than we normally do, but as I said, tomorrow is a very awkward day for a lot of folk, even in the wrestling industry, because, as mentioned, John Lennon was shot outside his apartment, but Daryl Abbott, I think to my memory, and I could be wrong, was the first musical performer of any genre to be killed while performing on stage. And you've heard of stories of Ted DiBiase's father dying of a heart attack, and we've heard of professional wrestlers having incidents, getting... you know, stabbed and whatnot. I mean, do you guys ever fear for that kind of stuff when you're performing, especially after this, Daryl Abbott? Is that in your head, Mike, or Stu, at any point, going like, okay, it happened to Abbott, what means it can't happen elsewhere?
Actually, I'll take this one here. Actually, just our last show, actually, we played at, somebody felt the need to... launch a beer can projectile right at my skull, and surprisingly accurate little guy he was, and yeah, Mike wasn't very happy about that, so it was pretty cool afterwards, though, I gotta say. But yeah, I don't really think we're down with being abusive towards performers, you know. I mean you can boo us, that's fine, we can handle that. I don't like getting stuff thrown at me, you know.
Yeah, it was a very traumatic experience having a beer can tossed at my face.
I laughed at him.
Well, it could have been a lot worse. Could have had a person tossed at you.
I've fallen off a stage, so I guess I'm the biggest danger to myself.
That was pretty funny, too. There was a good 1 foot gap in the front of the stage, and you know, it's pretty obvious to everybody. Mike felt the need to explore it. And it was good stuff, man. I don't know, Mike just has bad luck, man. I don't know what it is. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Do either one of you have a favorite song of Pantera's? Do you guys ever do cover songs of anybody like Pantera or other bands?
I love Cemetery Gates and 5 Minutes Alone. Cemetery Gates, freaking epic. I love that. And, you know, Cowboys from Hell, all their hits. I like their best of album and stuff, and that's a great album. They did a great Ted Nugent cover of Cat Scratch Fever and stuff. That was pretty awesome. Tony. What about you, Mikey? How's your knee?
My knee is fine. Revolution is my name. Love that song. Also the hit. Drag the Water. That's off of Trinkill. I think so.
I don't have their full playlist in front of me.
I'm pretty sure it is. But yeah, Great Southern Trendkill, all those mainstays, I guess.
Yeah. We love them indeed.
And talk to me about Screaming at the Silence, what you guys are up to these days. I know, Mike, you had said you guys were recently in the studio laying down stuff. Can you talk about what's coming up for the band?
Well, anybody who heard the last album, this one is very much, it will sound like a different band, because kind of, more or less, it kind of is. It's cool, though. We're definitely excited, and we definitely stepped it up a notch.
Like everyone says in their sophomore release, we got heavier, which we actually did. A lot more exploration of sound, because we've gone through lineup changes. Our drummer is a lot more technical. Our new guitarist can shred like a mofo.
Yeah, he can. It was nice. There's a new lead guitar player in the band now. It's pretty relaxing for me. We're very excited about the new album.
And yeah, do we have any local dates coming up in the Tampa Bay area that you guys can mention?
We're actually right in the middle of recording right now, and our next show is going to be February 12th at Gasoline Alley in Largo. And that's kind of our home club, and we always have a good time there. The people go off pretty hard there, so we like to visit there as much as possible.
All right, the band is Screaming at the Silence. We thank both Mike LaGorie and Stu Wired for stopping by tonight. Coming up after the break, we will get into the 2010 Jeff Pearson Memorial Cup event, and we'll talk some release news, some very weird release news that came out of the TNA tapings and an injury that occurred at last night's Impact taping. You're listening to All In World of Wrestling Radio here on Dimebag Darrell Tribute Night. We'll be back after this commercial break.
Ladies and gentlemen, with the advent of geek culture becoming mainstream, we here at the Wild Talk Radio Network are doing our best to capitalize on this phenomenon. In that vein, I, Mace, a co-host of Otaku Talk Live, have decided to move a small section of what we would talk about on OTL to its very own podcast. That podcast being Fashion the Book. Now, what you will hear on there is myself going through select readings of this week's comic book, and I just let you know what's going on. So, every Thursday, maybe Friday, maybe Saturday, you'll be able to hear me talk about comic books. Okay, maybe boring, maybe not, who knows? The only way you're going to find out is to go over to the archives section of wildtalkradio.com and download the show and have a listen for yourself. That's Bashing the Books, somewhere near the end of the lake, brought to you on WorldPopRadio.com.
If you're looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forum. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions, as well. There are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown. It's the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
This is Mate, the overworked co-host of WrestleTalk Radio, OWW Radio, Otaku Talk Live, the offside producer, Cindy Cleaning Boy, Building Diner, Advertising Guru, Bugs Bong Holder, Drink Runner, Omega's Transformer Record Keeper, and Back in the Book, all here on WildTalkRadio.com. If you decide to listen to a show that features a bit of the old-fashioned ultraviolence, people getting their heads kicked in, bones broken, and bloody crazy fights, then come on over and listen to Tap Outs to Knockouts live in the archive section of WildTalkRadio.com.
Mate, it's not all about the bloody stuff and the ultraviolence. Hey, this is Fuzz from Tap Outs to Knockouts. And if you want to hear the news, results, the technical side of MMA, check us out on WildTalkRadio.com in the archive section. And oh yeah, we do have the bloody stuff.
And now I know.
And knowing is half the battle. Hey! What are you guys doing in here? Get back to sleeping.
Apparently, I get a bad rap for putting Rock down all the time. And well, I guess I should apologize for it. He really is a good guy and does a lot of hard work around here. The Rock, I'm sorry. You are awesome, and I truly mean that. Okay, so how much am I getting paid to say that one? What do you mean this is still recording? Damn. Keep listening to Wild Talk Radio Network.
Back here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to the Wild Talk Radio Network. It is Pantera Tribute Night, as mentioned. Tomorrow is the double anniversary, which is horrible for most music fans. More none than our resident man who bounces on every show known to humankind. He shows up on TV radio from time to time. He now has a podcast called From Tap Outs to Knockouts that he does with Mace. He's the co-host of OTL on Wednesday nights and also part of Wrestle Talk Radio. Calling in from a plow, I believe, in Delaware, Ohio. The Spud guy is joining us. Thanks for taking time. And I previewed the idea of what happened to you on December 8th of 2004, but I think it best be heard from your lips.
Well, first of all, let me say this. I hate snow.
Yeah, I think Kevin Scott and I can agree with that. Kevin will be joining us in a couple minutes to talk TNA wrestling with us. As a former Long Islander, the only way I ever want to see snow is on TV. I don't know about you, Spug. I wish maybe we need to move you south.
Well, in the past 72 hours, I've had 12 hours of sleep.
Oh my lord.
Mhm. Yeah, we've gotten about 18 to 24 inches of snow in 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been pretty brutal. But, no. I tell you what, first of all, speaking of tap-outs, Alan, you going to come watch fights with us on Sunday or Saturday night?
We'll see what the schedule allows for. I'm going to give it my best effort.
Sweet.
Yeah.
No, December 8th, and you have to forgive me, like I said, I've had 12 hours of sleep in 2 days, or 3 days, so my brain is a little bit funny. But a buddy of mine and I were supposed to go to the show, and we're driving, and Columbus is about a two-hour drive from where we live in northeastern Ohio. We were driving down, and we get about maybe 10 minutes or so from the Alarosa Villa. We start seeing sirens and all kinds of stuff, and news came on the radio, and we were running late. And I want to say I was late getting off of work or something, but thank God we were late, because in that time frame, Dimebag Darrell had gotten shot, and I was supposed to be there at that show when he got killed. It is unfortunate. Now, I have to say this. I heard Cemetery Gates. I think that was Cemetery Gates. No, this was. So, I got to make a request, Alan. If this is Pantera tribute night.
All right, I'll see if I got it on the list. Give me a shout and see what you want, and I'll see if I had it on my list.
Revolution is my name.
Yes, that's on the playlist.
Yes. Probably one of the best, you know what? I tell you what. I don't know if you remember this. I know you're a Pantera fan, so do you remember? Oh God, it might have been Ozfest 02. It was at the Blossom Music Center in Akron, Ohio, and it made national news. Pantera played, and it had been really crappy all day. It had been rainy. It just been disgusting. And Phil's on stage, and they're playing, and I think they played Cowboys from Hell to open their set. And Phil didn't get the response from the crowd that he wanted.
Oh, yeah, I remember the story. This is messed up.
Yeah. This was great. Probably one of the greatest days of my life, though. So he's not getting the response from the crowd that he wanted. And we're all kind of out there being half-hearted and half-assed about it. And he said, if you MFers don't move, we're packing up the band and we're going off the effing stage. And so the next song that they play is Walk. Now, you get a bunch of rowdy people who tell them that they just paid $60 to see Dead Air for a half hour because Pantera's not going to play anymore. So they had just laid about $250,000 to $300,000 worth of sod on the Blossom Music Center, and it was the day before the Cleveland Orchestra was supposed to play for the big 4th of July show.
Oh,
we did like two. Yeah, we did like $2.5 to $3 million worth of damage to that place. people climbing on the pavilion, ripping up sod. It was like a violent Woodstock.
Oh, my God.
It was so much fun, though.
Yeah, well, but let me ask this before we let you get back to what you were doing. Is there part of you that, knowing you had tickets to that event, that in your mind, being that you're a trained wrestler and other parts of your brain, is there part of you that thinks, I could have charged that stage and took out that jackass before he got anybody else?
No. No, and I'll tell you why. And it's not a it wasn't a self-preservation thing, because a lot of us in that situation, I think, would just be terrified beyond all rational belief to do anything. But it's more of a protecting everybody else. Because if you look at it, you don't know what that dude would have done had somebody charged him on stage. He'd have just started firing off randomly. And yes, it's tragic that we lost Dimebag Darrell, but we could have lost a hell of a lot more people had somebody done that.
All right, and I will mention this, believe it or not, we did email Vinnie Paul Abbott, and we were respectfully declined by his management. He didn't want to come on here. People are going like, oh, you're making it up. I'll produce emails that we sent to his folks that run the
hill. I think Damage Plan's on tour, though, so that might have been why, too.
Yeah, he declined, and we were fine with that. We actually tried for Phil Anselmo, but I don't know how that would have gone over with some of the Pantera fans that I'm friends with, because
you know what?
I know some of the blood that's out there still all these years later.
You know, I had to say this about Phil Anselmo. F Phil Anselmo. Really. Because the dude, he was, alright, Pantera is probably one of the best hardcore metal bands that have been in existence in a very long time. And you and I can both agree on that. And I know our thought on metal differs as far as what we like. But they could have been bigger than Metallica. And I'm not being narcissistic or whatever when I say that. I'm being dead serious. They could have been bigger than Metallica.
On that note, we're going to go ahead and let the Spud guy get back to work. Be very careful out there, sir. And we will talk later on, because we need to set something up for our next week guest, who we'll mention before we go to break. So thanks for calling in, and we'll talk again soon.
Well, if I get off in the next hour or so, which I'm kind of hoping, maybe I'll show up.
You never know. Lance Hoyt's supposed to be here at 10:15, so you can possibly jump in on that interview.
If not, I'll just call in, because I got a couple of questions I want to ask him.
Far out. All right, we'll talk to you on the other side. Thanks for calling in.
No problem.
Alright, that is the Spud Guys, man. That's a pretty scary story to hear, man. Speaking of scary stuff, we're going to talk TNA Wrestling. Normally this would be where Mace jumps in, but I think Mace had it after watching Final Resolution this past Sunday. So we go to the Rolodex and tag in my compatriot from New York, Kevin Scott, who's involved in the Under the Ring blog that appears on the PoughkeepsieJournal.com website. What were your overall thoughts, instead of going match by match with you, just overall vibe of this pay-per-view, especially when you hear reports that came out before the opening match that the TNA World Champion Jeff Hardy was nearly pulled from the show, and there was a possible substitute world title match that either included him being stripped of the belt or having him drop the belt because he apparently showed up in an unable-to-perform condition. Now, before Kevin answers, this isn't to defend Jeff Hardy, but these guys had just come back from a very weird situation where they flew after the holidays over to the United Arab Emirates. So, to Kevin, overall thoughts to the pay-per-view, and just reading that about Jeff Hardy before you even log on or turn on your TV, what was your initial reaction hearing that and thoughts on the pay-per-view?
In terms of Jeff Hardy, I wasn't surprised. I imagine that if something probably going to happen sooner or later. Now, granted, we know a little bit more information now about the fact that he's saying, you know, it's just about exhaustion. They did have that trip, which apparently was a complete failure, which just makes the story 10 times better. I think I probably caught the news literally right before the show started, and I didn't know what to expect, quite frankly, from wrestler show. The show itself, it's TNA. It's everything they do is almost really good, and it just falls apart at the very end for some bizarre reason. You have a lot of decent matches. The first half of the show was pretty solid. I'll definitely give them that. I would say probably up until maybe a little bit in the Full Metal Mayhem match, which I wasn't completely blown away by, which I expected to be. But then especially starting with the Abyss Pope casket match to the very end of the show, I just sat there stunned that I was watching this. It's not good entertainment at the very least.
No.
I mean, I would say that my issue about the whole Jeff Hardy thing, even if it's a situation where he wasn't under the influence or wasn't personal demons, and it was simply about the exhaustion aspect, which is completely believable. I will definitely give benefit of the doubt. Why would TNA put him in the ring with Matt Morgan when, you know, accidents happen? Anything can happen. You know, someone gets dropped in their head. You know, obviously we've seen plenty of broken necks in wrestling. Why would you put somebody who is that out of it to the point where people suspected that there was some kind of problem? I don't see the logic behind that.
We went into ridiculous in-depth in this on Sunday night on Rust Talk Radio, and thanks to all of those that listened to that program and this one as well here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. And I made the comment, and I'm going to repeat it here for everybody, this pay-per-view seems really weird to the point that I believe 7 of the 9 matches on this pay-per-view, which are kind of like 7, 9 matches, this was a gimmick pay-per-view. The only unless you count a number one contender being a gimmick thing, and the new world television champion Douglas Williams defeating AJ Styles. Does that bother you that this was an almost all gimmick pay-per-view? But this is the same company who does a full-out cage pay-per-view in April in Lockdown, and is specialized in the Ultimate X match and King of the Mountain, which is still missing in action. If you've seen it, along with Desmond Wolfe, please write radio at onlineworldofwrestling.com. His family misses him, and we miss him a lot, too. Did this bother you, chunking down money to go, all right, 7 of these 9, a ladder, a table, a cookie cutter, tanning spray, a shark cage, a roller coaster at Universal was involved in this show?
The men's bathroom?
Oh, and, yeah, and a men's bathroom and a fire extinguisher and a very angry lady on the other end of it.
I would say, not only did it definitely bother me that it was such a overbooked show, but the name of the show is Final Resolution. What was resolved? I can't think of a single thing that actually came out of that show going, okay, well, that's where they need to go for the end of this angle, the end of the storyline, so you start up the next phase. This is absolutely pointless. It was a waste of time to sit there and watch all this go on. Especially since, as I said, it's not entertaining me. There was very little on the show that I actually sat back and go, you know what, that was worth my time. Maybe the William Powell fight. Outside of that, I can't think of a single thing.
We got some news out of this pay-per-view, and one of those was, as mentioned, have a new world television champion. The only championship to actually change hands in Douglas Williams. Many internet folks that wrote into the show, we asked through our Facebook page of favorite matches, least favorite, and this one came to be the favorite, and I would rather have this been in, like, an X Division championship match if Douglas got his championship back, but getting the TV title, not that bad, especially when he went in there with AJ.
Right. It's kind of a strange thing. Obviously, the two of them have incredible chemistry. And it looked like, especially with all the other matches being pretty much being gimmick matches, it was definitely out of place. that probably should have been spotlighted on a different show completely. Williams, I've loved for a while, ever since I first saw him in ROH. I can't remember what year it was, probably 2004, 2005, I saw him on DVD. He has a style that might not be very accessible for the average fan. That's a fair way of putting it. But he has a lot going for him. And obviously, AJ Styles is probably still one of my favorite wrestlers, even though I rarely see him wrestle. I said it was a very rare time on a pay-per-view. It was a very good match. It wasn't the best they probably could have gone through. And granted, if there was actually a build to it, as opposed to Douglas, turning on Fortune and hitting AJ once, and that was pretty much the entire circle for the fight. It would have made a lot more sense for storyline wise if Stevie Richards was the one challenging AJ Styles to a match, since AJ, supposedly tried to break his neck on purpose. It's the whole storytelling aspect of TNA never fully clicks. They don't build anything. And if they actually have something that just happens out of nowhere where they can't capitalize on it, they rush it too fast without even putting any thought into it. So then you're left kind of going, all right, anticlimactic.
He is Kevin Scott of Under the Ring, blog that is on PoughkeepsieJournal.com, which is owned and operated by Phil Strum, who will join us in a couple weeks to deal with the WWE pay-per-view TLC, which looks weirder and weirder by the day, but we'll get into that later on. My biggest disappointment from this show, and we'll get to Kevin's and probably some folks in the chat room, and you can also call in at 267-297-1397, was the World X Division Championship match with Robbie E once again getting out with the belt. And the cool part, a lot of folks said, was the reappearance of Shark Boy from almost a year ago. Still with the Stone Cold-like thing, getting Cookie into the cage, and poor Jay Lethal, man, the dude had it. He had him out, he got the tanning spray, and he decided, Robbie needs a little more spray, and it didn't work. So, I mean, on a DQ, did this bother you at all, this match, a gimmick match to keep the girl out? Still, I mean, what the hell, man? What are they going to have to do? Lock this girl in a David Blaine-like thing and submerge her in water for this guy to win the belt back?
It was a very strange finish. I sat there kind of almost stunned. I was almost stunned to the point that actually happened. It also goes to say that the fact that Shark Boy's reappearance is probably the highlight of the show. Nothing against Shark Boy, but this is your final favorite of the year. You really need to drive some things home. My thing about Jay Lethal, which upsets me more than anything else, is that he seemed, even just a few months ago, to actually be close to where he needed to be in terms of fully capturing the audience attention. They were putting him in the spotlight. He had that match against Flair, which a lot of people thought was a big deal. It comes out of that, and now he's losing to the guy from Jersey Shore. Where does this leave him in terms of his future in TNA?
That's a big question a lot of folks have been asking, Kevin, is what the ball being dropped ridiculously here that Jay was a part of, as you said, a very well-done feud with Ric Flair, and to drop on, it's not a drop to the World X Division Championship because it is prestigious in the company, but as you said, it is a drop character-wise. Is there a point where maybe he moves and so they move him to go after Doug Williams and the World TV mix him in with AJ? Or with Jeff Hardy having the world title belt, I would like to see Jay be moved around. And one point he had a decent tag team going with Sanjay when he was doing the Black Machismo thing, but this is a kid who's been misbooked on and off for a while.
It's a very strange thing, because, I mean, even with Hardy, doesn't he go to court tomorrow?
Unless it's been postponed for the 28th time, we're not 100% sure.
This whole situation is very bizarre. If you take into consideration the fact that they went so far that, well, according to whatever you want to believe, that they were actually looking forward to a replacement match, with also the fact that there's a court case this week,
maybe it should have been the best time to drop the title. Granted, with, you know, they just gave him a new belt and it kind of ruined the storyline. I understand that. But you had that issue. You do have, obviously, Lethal. You have Samoa Joe, where, you know, without a contract, once again, thought about drop the ball. It's kind of scary that a lot of their most important pieces right now are just up in the air, and they're pretty much hoping it works out. And we know TNA, so far, hoping it works out does not really work.
Exactly. And as you alluded, for fans that aren't aware of it, Samoa Joe's contract with TNA Wrestling expired, but he did work the Final Resolution pay-per-view match, taking on Jeff Jarrett in an MMA-style bout. They have not yet reached an agreement unless something's happened in the last couple of days at TV. Several websites reported that he was scheduled to be at this week's TV. To harken back to a situation that actually Christian, when he was in World Wrestling Entertainment about 5-6 years ago, his contract expired, and he didn't want to renew it. However, he actually was advertised as one of the picks on the Taboo Tuesday pay-per-view, showed up to work without a deal, and appeared, for fans that aren't aware of it, Samoa Joe has been with this organization since June 2005, made his debut at Slammiversary, and as we talked about on Wrestle Talk Radio, and I want to bring it up with you, because you're like myself, in trying to understand the tea leaves of Vince Russo and Conway and other folks to write for this company. He has got to be in the, since he's been at this organization, has said since June 2005, Joe has got to be the most mishandled character this side of Bret Hart going to WCW in 1997.
I would say yes in terms of potential, but then I'd have to throw Abyss in there, because I think Abyss has had a problem, even Eric Young, if you want to go there, but Abyss has had probably about 17 different character changes in a short period of time, which has ruined his credibility completely. Now, granted, Samoa Joe, I would say it's probably a lot more important than Abyss, but Abyss also has suffered the same way. With Joe, it's bizarre to think that the entire feud with Angle, Kurt Angle, was obviously rushed because of Angle's issues, whatever, but they dropped probably about a good year's worth of shows into about a three-week period, it felt like. I think they were both wrestled up to like 6 titles at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing how horrible they have handled Joe from every aspect, from when he was kidnapped by ninjas to the lack of actually taking advantage of feuds. Like, you had Joe and Nigel McGuinness in the same company. Nothing. You had Joe with Homicide. Nothing was done. Jay Lethal. They have history. Ball was dropped in terms of how do you have Kurt Angle, AJ Styles, and Samoa Joe in the same company and not have a triple threat match in pay-per-view? That's the easiest thing ever to throw together. I don't understand that. Never happened. Title reigns were kind of, gimmicky kind of jokes, transitional period, whatever. It's just mistake after mistake after mistake, and I don't know if it's even salvageable at this point. You know, how do you make him back to the monster he used to be?
We've also found out this, we're about being spoiler-free on this network show. However, two things came out of yesterday's taping that we do want to mention. The first is the stripping of the TNA Knockout Tag Team titles from Taylor Wilde and Hamada, and the subsequent apparent release of Hamada. And this Thursday night on Impact, you'll see a tournament to crown Knockout Tag Champions. I teased it earlier that this is a very confusing release because Hamada was one of their top stars and an international name. Why release this woman? Is it because she's not the stereotypical beautiful people person in your mind? I mean, Daphne's on the roster. She doesn't exactly fit the bill either, but is that, in your mind, why? I mean, I've tried to figure it out the last few hours.
I would say it's a combination of that. I've heard reports for a long time that flying her in was costing a lot of money, which, if that's the situation, then that probably should have been handled before anything went, from the very beginning. It's a shame, because obviously she's very talented. No one would know that because she's never on TV. But at the very least, they could have had her come in for one last show to drop the belt. I don't see the point in doing the whole, yeah, we're going to just have a tournament because we stripped them of the titles. No, is the given reason that they haven't defended the belts in X amount of time? Is that what they're going with?
I'm not sure. And this is the same company that a few months ago, after Hamada's former partner, Awesome Kong, Amazing Kong, made lunch meat out of one Todd Clem, Puzzle Lump Sponge, they did the same thing. So I guess that seems to be a thing. You know, instead of having them drop a championship, we'll do it out of a briefcase or just strip them. I mean, there's got to be something creative-wise that can be done here. Obviously not.
Well, creative is a funny word with TNA.
Oh, of course.
They could have done something better. It's just a joke. I mean, the Knockouts, as I've said many, many times, they used to be an actual great division. And then it turned into the Beautiful People division. They do have signs of life. I will definitely give Mickey and Tara credit. The 35th street fight they had, it was at least entertaining. They worked rather well. It looked like they were actually going at it. It was a lot better than a lot of street fights I've seen. And I got to give Mickey James special credit. I wouldn't even want to use a public restroom, let alone lie on the floor. So I mean, she gets my hand for that. That was rather impressive.
Yeah, and for fans that aren't aware of it, I mentioned I've covered TNA Wrestling from 2004 to 2007 at Universal Studios. So it was very humorous to see them brawl into the men's bathroom, which at certain TV tapes just look, picture your worst situation for a high school boys' bathroom. That's about what you got at TNA, as much as at Universal, as much as Universal staff cleans. So like a Jersey girl in our room was like, our chat room wanted to know, what the heck was she doing in the bathroom anyway? I said, what do you think she was doing? She's going to the bathroom. Like, of all the places Madison Rain hangs out, she hangs out at the men's room in Universal Studios. Conveniently with a fire extinguisher, Kevin.
That was just a bizarre. My favorite part was the fan who was reading the newspaper. I mean, really, like, you're at a pay-per-view, so you're spending your time in the bathroom reading. That's
exactly
TNA programming.
Exactly. Sometimes you gotta go, you gotta go. The other item that came out of TV last night, and for fans that aren't aware of it, if you live in Tampa, you live in Orlando, TNA did a taping last night. They're doing one tonight as we speak. And then I believe they're doing Thursday and Friday. They're giving the boys and girls a day off tomorrow. Tara Lisa Verone suffered a torn ligament in her elbow during last night's taping of a steel cage match between her and Mickey James. This match actually will main event this Thursday's event. However, it looks like she will be out of action for several weeks. Her Twitter account, which, once again, thanks to Kenny King, I'm not allowed to have one. I'm not cool enough, and I don't really think people need to know about I Had Toast. It was awesome. Lisa Verone Tara said the following. Tore a ligament in my elbow last night in a match against at Mickey James. It was my good elbow, but we made history. We were main event. I didn't know she had a good elbow, let alone a bad elbow. So we wish her a speedy recovery and lots of ice, and hopefully she will be brought back into the mix somehow. They'll bring her in as a one-armed enforcer, maybe. I mean, just the idea of this feud going to that level, and WWE's gotten close when they had Trish Stratus and Mickey James and Trish Stratus and the former Victoria. But does this interest you, seeing this as a main event on Impact?
It does. It's like, I definitely, like I said, I give them a lot of respect for what they've done, and it's like, what incredibly bad luck and bad time to get the main event and that's when you injure yourself. At the very least, it gives you another option to try and get away from an all-immortal show. Because for me, I'm really not that interested in that storyline, and that is the entire show. So what's catching my attention? If you can have two women who don't look bad actually put on good matches with each other, hey, I'm all for that.
He is Kevin Scott of the Poughkeepsie Journal. The blog is called Under the Ring. He's cohorted with Phil Strum, who writes for Poughkeepsie Journal. The next pay-per-view is Genesis. And that would be on the 9th, I believe, of January. If you were the book at TNA, and I know we're about to go into dangerous territory with us holding the pen creatively for TNA, but what do you hope for? Are you sitting there going, I want Matt Morgan and Jeff Hardy in a cage, or I want the belt up there, or I want Ric Flair on a pole? And did we see the end of this scenario at the pay-per-view last night, or Sunday night, or is this at least another pay-per-view match?
I would imagine it would continue as long as Jeff Hardy is not defending his title in jail. I'm not sure what's really going to happen anymore, because I think they've, as you said, they continued the whole process about, it feels like, at least a dozen times, which is probably not that many. But who knows where he's going to be? It's going to be a very interesting thing. I've said for a show called Final Resolution, nothing was resolved. I can see this going in a direction. Maybe they have Anderson come out and say, well, he wants a shot at him. You still have RVD, if I hasn't faced, you know, Hardy since was it Bound for Glory. There's so much that can be done, but it really all depends if you can keep the guy out of prison. They're going to need the lawyers to help them out the book on that one.
Would that be pretty cool? Live from so-and-so prison in North Carolina, TNA's lockdown.
Yeah, just don't drop the belt.
We can get Plaxico Burress transferred there for us New York fans. And, and as we go, I know you were not whimpering like I was in a fetal position last night watching the New York Jets get annihilated on Monday Night Football. I think New England just scored in the last 20 minutes or so ago. And how much in the media up there the last couple days was that thing just like all over the place, that it was like the AFC title game preview?
It's been rough. It's been nonstop since probably last Sunday. They've been going on and on and on about it. We've had probably up to the minute, late breaking news updates every hour on the hour. Interviews all over the place. Obviously, the area's been very quiet today. No one's really talking about the Jets at all. But yeah, I was watching a game at my friend's bar, and I think maybe within the first 3 minutes, it just became shot time. Nobody was paying attention to it. It was exactly what everyone was fearing, but no one really expected it to be that bad.
Good God. And well, hopefully when we have you back on again, it won't be as bad. So we thank you for stopping by. Coming up after the break, if she is able to call in, she's getting off a very crazy 10-hour work schedule. Nikki Rocks will be joining us. Also after the break, we will have Lance Hoyt. So we'll be back on All I Will or Wrestling Radio.
Of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Only a month away with every single page shot full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Eric Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Watch the most definitive sports for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best known internet writers we all today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Christine Cage, Brett Derry,
Janice Michelle,
Christy Hemme,
Jay Lethal,
Brett the Hitman Hart,
Sergeant Slaughter,
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man,
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time,
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Woogie,
and tomorrow,
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site for pro shoes, Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hi, this is Christy Annie, TNA Knockout.
I'm out here because I have something very important that I need to say.
And you're listening to Power Pop Radio Network.
On the Wild Talk Radio Network. Thanks to Kevin Scott for stopping by. Don't forget PoughkeepsieJournal.com. It's where you can read his blog along with Phil Strum, who will join us in a couple weeks to talk about WWE TLC. In the next few moments, we'll be talking about a double promotional show that is going on this weekend in Dunellen, New Jersey at the Dunellen Knights of Columbus. It is 647 Grove Street. Tickets are $19 for adults, $17 for kids and seniors. You can actually go to WSUWrestling.com, buy tickets in advance, or call 732-888-1704, and you'll get to see a main event that a lot of fans have been waiting for if you're a fan of WSU and you're a fan of women's wrestling. It is a battle of former WSU world champions, a former guest of this show, and a favorite, Miss Alicia, is going to take on former TNA Knockout, and once again back in WSU. We are gracious with our time with her. We appreciate Nikki Rocks joining us. Good evening and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Take us through your, you've been in and out of this promotion the last few years, and we'll touch on TNA in a moment, but talk about this promotion in general, because it's a unique promotion that is, unless you're at other events that the current champion Mercedes Martinez appears on, like NYWC, or she's been at Evolve, unless Rick Cataldo's out there, it's all women's wrestling. As someone who's been a part of these events, do you find that sometimes a blessing, or do you sometimes find it a curse of like, okay, there's no other matches except all the women to keep us, keep these fans going?
Well, I kind of think that it's a little bit better, because if not, you go to a wrestling show and it's just, oh, well, we have all these guys half naked to watch. And a lot of times, like, majority of the crowd is a bunch of guys. So I kind of think it's like a little bit, not better, but I think it gives them something a little bit more interesting to watch, at least.
Mm.
I actually enjoy doing all the girls' shows because it gives me a chance to see all my friends. And I have a lot of fun. And the fans that we normally have are ones that come around to the majority of the girls' shows. So it's always really nice to see some of the fans that come out.
Now, this isn't your first time being in the ring with Alicia. Talk about her as an opponent and as someone, by some of the fans and some of the websites, they have kind of crowned her Miss WSU, if you want to use your Dr. Evil Mini-Me quotes. Does that bother you at all?
I think that she's worked really hard for where she is, and when WSU had first started, I know she was one of the main players there. Like, both of us had both started when when it was first open. So we're both kind of there. I think it was me, her, Mercedes was there, and I think that she's one of the people that's been there the majority of the time. So I think she's kind of worked really hard for it, and I don't disagree with what people say. I'm just really excited that I get to get in the ring with her again.
We did get a big set of email questions at radioandonlineworldofwrestling.com, and we've also got some in our chat room, so we're going to try to get to them, and including ones that I have. Someone wanted to know in our chat room who your favorite referee is. And I think this is like a cryptic one that may lead to something that may, I don't know if this is going to get us in trouble with someone in our chat room, but who is your favorite referee?
My favorite referee?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of that one. There's a bunch of different guys that, like, there's Ref Hansen, there's a Ref Johnny, there's Fat Pants, there's a bunch of the guys that I just love being in the ring with.
Someone in the chat room claims that it's an easy answer. Does that ring out?
Oh, yes. Easy. Of course he's one of my favorite refs.
Yeah, he jumped on earlier and was like, whoa. One of the questions that came in, came from LaVonda Bell of Nashville, Tennessee, who wanted to know, I was a fan of yours coming into TNA when you were part of the Voodoo Kin Mafia. How much of a step did you have in creating Roxy LeBeau, and how much of that was TNA creative, and did you like the character?
A lot of that, actually, they had an idea of what they wanted. They had, like, a basic idea. When I got a phone call to go there for the first time, it was basically, we want a voodoo, Sonny and Cher, gypsy, witch type of person. So try to find some clothes that go with that. And that
good
was
luck.
Basically what. Yeah. So it got a little pricey because you don't know what you're looking for, what they're looking for, and they didn't necessarily know exactly what they were looking for. They had an idea. So a lot of what ended up coming about, because there were so many different looks from it, there was the face paint and the dreads, and then it got a little bit different, and a lot of it was just kind of like a chance to see if I could play with the character or not and see if something went okay, if they agreed with it or not. But basically the idea of having like a voodoo queen was ultimately TNA's idea. They just didn't know exactly how they wanted to do it. So it was kind of like a touch and go the entire time. But I enjoyed the character. A lot of people thought it was like cheesy and stuff like that, but I kind of enjoyed it. It was a chance to be something different. And in my area, I was a good guy majority of the time, and then all of a sudden I get on TV and they're like, hey, you're going to be a bad guy. So it was kind of nice to be able to make that adapt to it.
Which leads to our next question that comes from Jersey Girl in our chat room. I'm sure you get this question a lot, so I apologize for it coming, but what were your thoughts when Creative came to you and said, so we're going to ask you to shave your head? Yeah, what was your first? And remember, we're PG rated, so don't use what you might have said.
The first thing I said was, okay, are you guys going to pay me? And it was right around like summertime, so I was like, yeah, it's cool. And I'm not really, I'm not a very vain person. People take me for who I am and for what I say. So if the way that I saw it is, if I have hair or no hair, if somebody really is like that important, they'll stay around and not judge me for it. So I was for it. I thought it was great, and it separated me from the other girls, and it was something that I'll always kind of have a connection with some of the girls for that, the girls that were in the match, and it's a big thing to me. I enjoyed it. I didn't want to grow my hair back, actually. It's kind of a pain in the ass.
Nikki Rocks joining us here on All I Will of Wrestling Radio, 267-297-1397. If you want to join us really quick, like I said, her time is limited due to her real profession, which we'll talk to her about in a couple moments here. To the hair thing, WWE went in that direction with Serena Deeb. Did you sit there watching or have friends come up and tell you they gave her the G.I. Jane, Sigourney Weaver, and 3-Look 2, dude? And was there a point where you're going, ah, crap, they stole my thing? Or you're like, okay, it's flattering that they stole what I did?
I actually text. her, like, right after I heard about it and told her that she would love it. It was going to be the easiest hairstyle she's ever had. And
is that liberating?
It's so great. Like, you just wake up in the morning, and it's not like you have to really do anything. Like, when you have longer hair, or, like, I have curly hair, so I always have to take care of it. It has to be something. So when it was shaved, I just wake up in the morning and takes you 5 seconds to get ready. It was amazing. But I didn't have any hard feelings over it at all. I was just kind of like, huh, well, that works. And it worked for her, and it kept her on TV for a while. Anything that keeps my friends working makes me happy.
In WSU, in recent months, there have been factions popping up. Rain has her group. There's the Cosmo Club with Cataldo and the current spirit champion who doesn't want to do our show. We're not offended by that, but Brittany, call us. We really want to talk. Do you like seeing that in WSU, this idea of instead of just, okay, there's a couple tag teams and that's the clique? Do you like seeing this setup of some factions going on?
I don't mind it at all, because I'm actually really good friends with Rain, so that kind of makes me happy that I got stuck with her. But I think it's kind of cool. It's a different thing. You don't normally see that on any of the female shows, so it kind of makes it stand out a little bit. It brings a different element to the show.
Another chat room, actually another email question came from Cindy Larson of Nashville, Tennessee. Wanted to know, is there ever a possibility of you working for ROH or Evolve like Mercedes Martinez had, and would you welcome that opportunity?
I would for sure. It would be something that I would totally look forward to, because I know they have some really good girls there. It's just something that hasn't been offered to me, and if it was, I wouldn't have a problem doing it at all. I think it would be really fun.
There's a Hall of Fame event coming up soon for WSU. What are your thoughts on an event like that? Do you think it's about time that, I mean, WWE's got a couple folks in their Hall of Fame, but WSU is the first one to do a women-specific Hall of Fame. Is that something that you welcome, or are you sitting there going, it's about damn time?
Yeah, I think it would be great, and I better be in it, damn it. Yeah. I think it's a really cool idea for him. I think that Sean has a lot of good ideas, and he does a lot of different and interesting things with the company. So I'm always kind of surprised when I hear new stuff that he comes up with, because it's usually something that the other companies already have, but they just haven't been done for just, like you said, like female specific. So I think it's really cool.
Is there a possibility, like a 1% or 2% possibility of going back to TNA, or do we never say never?
I'm a person that I never say never, but at the same token, I'm kind of at a point right now where I'm only going to really, I don't want to go somewhere where my best interests aren't involved. I'm really happy where I am in life right now. Like, I do a lot of my fitness competitions now, and I help people change their lives for the better, and I think that that's something a lot more rewarding than what normally happens in, like, the wrestling world. Like, doing the shows on the side and stuff is a lot more fun for me than going and doing any of the TV or anything like that.
Which leads us to one of our last email questions from Pat Jenkins of Seattle, Washington. Hey, Nikki, I saw on your Facebook page that you are a personal trainer besides being a wrestler. How can I be trained by you? Well, Pat, you asked the question. We'll get the answer from Nikki.
You can, a lot of times people can reach me on my Facebook. You can check me. It's Nikki Rocks, and in parentheses it will say Fitness Rocks on Facebook. And, just send me an email right over to there, and we can get started, like, discussing all the, different elements that come into it. But, I help a lot of people through, email, and they just kind of do, they'll send me pictures, they'll send me what they eat, and I give them workouts and stuff, and everything is very hands-on. I speak to the person at least like 2 or 3 times a week, and they have constant contact with me. So it's something that if somebody's interested in doing, they can just go right to that fan page, the Facebook page, and they can send me an email, and I'll answer them.
All righty. Stay with us for a second or two, Nikki. We're going to let you go in a minute here, but We want to let everybody know it is WSGWrestling.com this Saturday. Go and see her versus Alicia. Coming up after the break, guest one was Nikki, and we're appreciative of her being here. Guest two will be former TNA star and WWE star Lance Hoyt here on Dimebag Darrell Tribute Night, Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back.
Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site for pro shoes. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hey everyone, this is Phil Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kind of did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer. I am the host of the...
Oh my God, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday night, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock...
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy. Do you have a certain passion? Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or anything goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talkie Talk Live, all you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
Hey, this is Charlie Haas, one half of the world's greatest tag team. And you're listening to me on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Wild Talk Radio Network. Here we are on my Wall of Wrestling Radio. I am Alan Wojcik. Thank you for joining us here each and every week from 9 until we run out of stuff to say. The least formatted show in wrestling. Thanks to Nikki Rocks for joining us on our program. Definitely check out her Facebook, Nikki Rocks, where you can get all the cool fitness stuff. I'm already getting some information working out, because I said to Nikki off the air, my workout consists of chasing my two-year-old around the house right now. We are a couple weeks ago, we were supposed to have this gentleman on the show after his untimely release from World Wrestling Entertainment, and due to travel situations, he was unable to make it, but we rain-checked him, and he is. We're very honored to have the former Vance Archer, the man who's also been formerly Dallas, he's been Shadow. We love him as Lance Hoyt. Thank you for joining us on the program tonight, and hopefully we don't drop you, as you said. I know we're driving somewhere. When we booked this interview, you told me a funny story of TNA wrestling when your situation with TNA ended before WWE. Could you give that story to the fans? Because I found it rather amazing.
I don't remember exactly what story we're talking about. Give me a reminder and I'll tell you.
Your contract issue that they had with them about a release and the 90-day clause.
I just would prefer to keep that one personal. I apologize. I just don't want to put that out there.
Okay. Not a problem. But,
That's a good story for my friends, good story for people, you know.
Okay, I apologize.
No worries.
When you look at going back, before we go into everything with WWE,
okay,
is there a regret at all, any regret at all in your mind that you even left TNA to go to WWE, or was it something that it was in your mind, you had to try it, you had to go to the next level, so to speak?
You know, I think each and every person that ever steps into the ring always strives to be in the best place at the best time, doing their best, and being something that's always remembered in this business. When I first started with TNA, it was an amazing opportunity. The company was, just starting. I mean, I know I joined at some point after they'd already started, but, you know, it was still on the groundwork, and it was still trying to build. You know, we were still just doing the Wednesday night pay-per-views out of Nashville, Tennessee. You know, was there when we first, you know, got an announcement to us even that, you know, we're going on the Fox Sports Network, and then we had the Impact Zone, and we saw the first pictures and just the growth that was happening with TNA, and it was an exciting time. And, you know, at the time it was just, this is a national organization, especially once we hit TV, regardless of it being on Fridays at 3 p.m., it was still on a national television network. And you know, then when we moved to Spike TV, and, you know, we had a period where we were off TV for 4 months, and we were just doing internet shows and pay-per-views, and some of the best wrestling, in my opinion, was produced at that point, simply for the fact that it wasn't convoluted with all the craziness and the crazy storylines and things like that, and it really was total on-top action at that point. It was just wrestling, and it was based on the guys who were busting their butts and trying to make a name for themselves. You know, not to say that anything really got bad when we went on Spike, because now we're on a national network and things have to change when you go into a different spotlight. Unfortunately for myself, I think there were times at TNA when the spotlight changed, you know, for myself and several other talents. There were times when they just said, hey, we'll get to you. We will. Don't worry. We've just got to do this first and then we'll get to you. And unfortunately in this business, sometimes when you're told that, they never get to you, you know, and that's the crappy part about this business sometimes. Now, do I regret anything? No, I don't regret any part of my path that I've taken. I appreciate every minute of time that I got from TNA, from WWE, you know, the fact that anybody has ever allowed me the opportunity to be in the ring, and the fans have either cheered me or booed me, loved me or hated me. It didn't matter. You know, the fact that I was there is what I loved and enjoyed, and I don't regret any of it. I don't regret, you know, being at TNA. I don't regret leaving TNA. I don't regret being in WWE, and, you know, I wish things were different right now, and, you know, the future holds a lot of open opportunities, and I'm going to take them, and who knows where that's going to end up, you know, but I don't regret anything, no.
When we had Jimmy Rave on the show a couple times in the last few months to talk about his promotion, Rampage Pro Wrestling, the fans brought up the Rock and Rave connection and Christy Hemming.
Wait a second, Rock and Rave.
Rock and Rave.
Infection.
infects. I apologize.
That's the next one. Everybody messes that up. I don't know why. We were infectious, baby. We were infectious.
Yeah, he brought up that it was one of his favorite tag team combinations with you. Did you feel that way as well? That if TNA had given you more time, that right. there could have been a title run at some point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the great thing about what we were doing, you know, especially when we were told that we were going to be doing it the way we ended up doing it, because we were together, Jimmy Rave, myself, and Christy. We were the Rock and Rave Infection. Before the guitars came out, you know, and we showed up to TV one day and they said, this is what we need you guys to do. And at first, you know, we were like, oh my God, are you serious? This is what we have to do. But we made it our own and we had fun. And I think a lot of times in this business, that's when you see the biggest things happen in the business is when guys take things, make it their own, and then it works.
Yeah, and a little funny to see the Rock, and first, let me just tell you for a second, a little funny to see a couple of years later, the Motor City Machine Guns playing right. Guitar Hero or Rock Band on TNA Impact.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. They were promoting one of them. It was either the Guitar Hero, the new Guitar Hero, Green Day, or one of those.
What? I feel a feud coming on. You know,
yeah.
it was fun. You know, to say it was one of the more fun times I've had in the business because we were just having fun. I absolutely believe with the talent that Jimmy had and regardless of what some people say, the talent I have, that if we'd have been given an opportunity to really shine and really been a competitive tag team in comparison to what we were and where we were put at, I absolutely believe the Rock and Rave Infection would have been one of the better known tag teams in TNA and all the business. Like I said, the business has its ways of doing things, and unfortunately that wasn't the path we were put on, and we did the best we could as well we could. I remember for a while there, you know, we were one of the main tag teams, and we were having some knockdown, kicks and butt tag matches. And I remember we had a big triple threat match with the Guns, myself, Rick Kinney, and LAX at the time. It was on a pay-per-view. And we were in an opening match, and, you know, we tore the house down, and we came back, and they were like, wow, that's how you start a pay-per-view, guys. Thank you, you know. And we loved it. We had a great time. We all gelled so well together. So if you ask, you know, how I felt about it, I had a great time. I just wish things had been more prominent and a little bit better in the long run with Jim and I as a tag team, you know.
Yeah, we did get some questions to our email box at radioandonlinewellofwrestling.com. We'll get to those in a second, but we do have a chat room that we use during the show. Jersey Girl wanted to know, who in your mind was a better tag team partner, Jimmy Rave, your partner Kurt Hawkins in WWE, or R-Truth, Ron the Truth Killings?
That's such a loaded question, but at the same time, it's a good question. Each and every guy had such a different quality to them that it made each tag team a lot of fun and great. You know, Timmy was so smooth in the ring, so good at what he did, and he was a different style of, you know, being that we were at TNA at the time, of that X Division style. He did the things he did, and it was a different way. Ron had the following he's always had. He's always been over. It didn't matter where he was or what he's doing. He comes out, yells, what's up, and the people go nuts. And that made it easy to follow and be a part of that because of that. Kurt had the attitude. Kurt had the bravado of that smart ass and that guy that, you know, you just love to hate because he was that in the ring and to the people and it made it work. Unfortunately, I think all the tag teams, we've just never been really given the platform to shine, not given the time to really to get over and be over and stay over.
No.
So who was my favorite? They were all great in their own ways, and I enjoyed working with each and every one of them.
Yep. You received your last appearance on TNA television was February 26th, and your first appearance on FCW programming was May 14th, taking on Justin Angel. At what point did creative say to you, well, we really like you as Lance Hoyt, but we got this Lance Archer name and then Vance Archer. Take us through that creative process. Was it just a name
Lance Archer,
was it?
Lance Archer never existed for one. I laughed that different magazines and things like that actually had it in there. When it was first announced as Vance Archer, I just think somebody automatically heard Lance and then decided to post it
on the internet, and for whatever reason, people believe it existed, and it never existed. You're asking a question about WWE and names. How many people really have their own names these days? There's very few. You know, some of the main guys who were over came in at a little bit different time when they were allowing guys to have their own names and work with that. And now, I mean, I don't know really anybody that's really coming in and having a real name when they go on the WWE television.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of how that process came about. Vance obviously was a play on my name, and Archer's my father's name.
All right, which leads to a question from Mike Shuck of Tampa, Florida, wants to know, no offense, Lance, but when I first heard Vance Archer as a name, I expected you to walk out with archery equipment and a Robin Hood-like gimmick. Was this ever talked about?
No.
Okay, I get the questions, I have to ask them. We're the type of show where we get stuff, and that was one of those, I'm like, I know the answer to this, but I'm going to let Lance take it.
I mean, I could be really condescending to the people who choose to think that in the way it was. It's simply based on a name. I mean, there's a cartoon on FX now called Archer. There's no point or no reason does it have anything to do with Robin Hood or archery. It's just a name.
What went through your mind when they said to you in November of 2009, so we're going to move you up and you're going to be on our version of ECW? Were you a little let down that you didn't go Raw SmackDown, or were you just happy to be up on one of the main rosters?
First off, I didn't know I was going until about 2 days before, and even then, I didn't know what was happening. And no, I wasn't disappointed. Why would I be disappointed to be on one of WWE's television networks, one of the television programs? Your goal is to get there. Your goal is to start somewhere, is to get a chance. And that was my opportunity. That was my chance. You know, it started strong. So why would I be upset at not being on either one of the programs? You know, look at a lot of the top guys that they're using now that were on ECW, guys who, you know, Sheamus, Jack Swagger, guys that started on ECW, and as they grew, they moved on to the main rosters with the other shows, and now they're doing what they're doing. So at the time, I saw it as nothing but an awesome opportunity. So no, I wasn't let down at all. I was excited when I actually found out you're on television.
Yeah, phone number is 267-297-1397 if you want to join us here on All My World of Wrestling Radio with Lance Hoyt. For the first few months there, you were involved with some of the mainstays of the organization who have been in either the original ECW or were mainstay WWE talent. Tommy Dreamer was one of your first opponents. As a person, I wasn't an ECW fan, but having seen him recently in TNA pay-per-views where he wrestled with an injured wrist and kept going, was that one of those moments maybe in your life where you said, wow, I'm wrestling Tommy Dreamer. This guy is like the mainstay of ECW. Or did you just go, okay, another match?
Oh, God, no. Absolutely. Tommy and I thought we had some really good matches. I got to work with him a lot on live events. Worked with him a few times on television. He was very instrumental in helping me out in a lot of ways. And absolutely, he's somebody that is so well respected in the business of professional wrestling, sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it. It was an honor to even be allowed in the ring with him, and then, you know, to work with him the way we did, you know. So absolutely, I thought it was a tremendous honor. I thought it was a tremendous, you know, opportunity to be able to work with Tommy Dreamer and anybody I stepped in the ring with. Even the guys when I started out, and they were considered locals, and they were, you know, unfortunately under my boot at the time, I considered it an honor because I was on WWE television, and I was honored to get to work with anybody on WWE, and I was going to try to do the best I could, you know. So anybody I step in the ring with, I consider it an honor. I consider it a privilege to be in that ring. So, and Tommy Dreamer especially.
For a few weeks there on either ECW or WWE Superstars, you were in with Shelton Benjamin, and obviously you are a very tall person. Is it interesting in your mind to try to work with a guy who, if he went to TNA, could be an X Division star? I mean, the guy was always the mainstay in a Money in the Bank match. And was there any point that you're sitting there going, Okay, how do I work this? Or did Shelton just bring so much that it was easy to be in the ring with him?
Shelton always fought so much that it's easy to be in the ring with him, but Shelton is not a small guy by any means. I don't know. You know, I'm fairly taller than pretty much everybody else I step in the ring with, but Shelton by no standard was a small guy. You know, I think if he was in TNA on their X Division route, he would be a giant in that sense, because he's a big boy. He's a big dude. So, there wasn't any issue, and his background and his ability was beyond strong enough to make it easy to work in the ring with him. There was never a, what am I going to do here? It was like, oh, okay, this is going to be fun.
I got a question from Tyler Fuller? Yeah, that's what it says. I'm trying to read the email here. It says, Lance, I was in attendance of WrestleMania 26 and wanted to know what were your thoughts on even being a part of that mega event? And for fans that don't know it, Lance was a part of the dark match, traditional Battle Royal, Raw, SmackDown, ECW type thing. That's got to be mind-blowing that you walk into that building and just go, okay, this is going to be international pay-per-view. I hope I don't fall.
Yeah, it was, I don't know if there's really good words to say, because I think even to that point, we kind of heard the rumor that we were going to have the Battle Royal, so we didn't know if it was going to happen or not. You know, when I got to the building, you know, it's retardedly overwhelming, and I say that word not to offend anybody, but it was just crazy because it's where the Phoenix, or the, you know, the Arizona Cardinals play. It's that big of a stadium. The field is rolled into there, and it's outside, and you can go look at the 100 yards worth of grass, or actually it's probably 120 plus yards worth of grass that they roll in and out of this giant domed building. And you know, I have a picture of the stage and the setup with people standing underneath it, and it looked like ants because it was so large and so monstrous. It was amazing, you know, and the fact that when we actually found out, okay, lace up your boots, you know, it's not on TV, but it'll be highlighted, and you guys are going to be a part of this Battle Royal, and it was like, really? And to get to walk out in front of 72,000 people, I remember I said to one of my friends, we walked out, and I go, I looked back as we're walking down this, you know, 100-yard ramp to the ring, and I go, can you believe this crap? And I said, in other words, and he just says, no, man, this is awesome. You know, and we're just, for us being our first time part of it, you know, it was absolutely amazing. You know, and it, granted, you know, some people will say, oh, it was just a dark match. Oh, it was just a Battle Royal. It's like, oh, I got to be in some form and manner a part of WrestleMania. And if you get the DVD, you get to watch it. So in I was part of WrestleMania, and that was an amazing, amazing thing. Obviously, because of my situation right now, it may or may not ever happen again. I'm busting my butt to get back there. I hope I do get to be a part of it, and then, you know, to get to watch the show from certain areas. You know, a lot of us found different places we could go so that we could watch WrestleMania from more of a fan's perspective rather than, you know, backstage on a monitor or anything like that. And, you know, it was truly amazing. It was beyond words, you know, really to say.
Got an email from Jason Davis of Tampa, Florida. Lance, really enjoyed seeing you work at the FCW event. Talk about being in FCW and the roster of office folks that were there, including Steve Kern and Dr. Tom Pritchard. How much did they help you in transitioning from TNA to WWE style?
All those guys, Steve Kern, Dr. Tom, Norman Smiley, all the different guys would come in at different times and help us out. You know, and when people say the style, it truly is a different mindset. It truly is a different world. And they have the front, you know, front office, the front point to tell you, you know, this is what we need from you here. This is what we need, you know, this is what McMahon wants to see when you go up there. And it's invaluable what they're teaching and what they're helping you with. So it was awesome. They're awesome. Like, enough about them in a positive manner that, you know, without putting them over and sounding like I've just come up, because they helped me out tremendously.
Yeah, because I was there. I can spill to the vans. I've been to that facility to see where you guys train, and that's a pretty nice facility, just that you have three full-size WWE rings back-to-back-to-back,
right.
And the access to the staff, I mean, especially once you joined the main roster, even when you were on SmackDown, and we'll talk about the rest of that experience in a moment, was there anyone in your mind producer, road agent was that you specifically went to, sought out that, like, a Ricky Steamboat or Arn Anderson or Malenko? Was there any of them that you were just like, before I do anything, I want to shake the person's hand for guiding the way to even be a wrestler? And who was your go-to guy if you ran into issues in setting up a match?
While I was up on the road or while I was at FCW?
Up on the road.
Up on the road. You know, they changed who worked with us all the time. I would have to say Arn Anderson helped me out tremendously a lot in the beginning. He was the guy that worked with me more than anybody. But each and every one of the agents, each and every one of the guys who worked with us had their different opinions and their different ideas and their different thoughts, and all of them were invaluable. And, you know, I mean, it's amazing when you get to pick the brains of some of the guys who are considered the best technical workers in the business and have more respect from the boys and the guys and everybody around us than you can even imagine. So, you know, it was a privilege just to get, even to get in trouble by them because they wanted me to do better, you know. It sucked to get in trouble. It sucked to get yelled at and things of that nature. But if they were doing that, that meant they were trying to help you, which that's a good thing in itself, so. You know, I'd have to just say Arn because he was the guy that worked with me the most when I first got there. But all of them helped me out in many different ways and were tremendous.
At what point did Creative come to you and say, we want to do a tag team, Curt Hawkins, Meat Vance Archer? And how much did you cringe when you heard Matt Stryker try to christen you guys the Gate Crashers?
We didn't cringe. We were looking for an identity. We were looking for an opportunity. And, you know, we were just trying to do our best with whatever we were given, and anything that helped set us apart, even if it was something, the name is the Gate Crashers, which we ultimately felt good about adopting. It was never, you know, officially named that. That was just kind of the internet name, because it had been mentioned several times. So, you know, we didn't cringe. We enjoyed, you know, any kind of good identity, something that set us apart and hopefully was going to help us move further and further into the tag division.
Was it something easy for you to transition from being singles on the road for a while? And how much did you know Curt? Did you know him in FCW at all when you were building this up to being on the road?
As far as the tag team, we never built it up to be on the road. We were... You know, he'd been off the road for some time, and he got the call to come back to TG one day, and their idea was to put him and I together, and we didn't know that it was happening until it happened. I'd known him from FCW and seen him work time and time again in some awesome matches and take guys who, you know, were very new to the business and help them along in tremendous ways. So I had a lot of respect for him, his abilities and everything like that. So when they told us we were going to be a tag team, both of us saw good things happening, you know, and we were planning on taking each of our strengths and trying to hide our weaknesses and work hard and improve and get better and move forward.
And when you were, this is also another question from Catherine Hollister, also of Tampa, Florida. You're popular down here. when you were in, I was a big fan of your work in FCW, Lance, and wanted to know your thoughts on being in the ring with the South Beach Boys and Junico and Dos Equis. For fans that don't know it, FCW is featured in Tampa, Florida area on the Bright House Sports Network, so their weekly TV. Interesting two different sets of tag teams there, Lance.
Yeah, I don't know if his name was ever Dos Equis.
I don't know. That's what she said. I'm going off the notes.
Again, stuff that shows up on the internet sometimes makes me laugh out loud. LOL. all of them awesome. Wow. Junico and Tito are amazing. The styles that they bring into the ring sets them so far apart from what's, you know, out there right now. It's something when they get let loose, it's going to be great. The South Beach Boys, I thought, helped both those guys. You know, Percy Watson, who was very new to the business, you know, one of those stories, you know, he played football and things like that, an amazing athlete, such a cool guy. I mean, the character he created was beyond entertaining and awesome, and people got to see it and kind of recognize it when he was on NXT. You know, and Darren Young, who was on the first NXT and was, you know, part of Nexus at one point. When those two guys were together, you know, it allowed them both to bring out personality and their abilities. And Darren is an amazing wrestler. And, you know, I think if he's given the opportunity, he's going to show him something special. And Percy Watson had more personality than just about anybody in the world. And if he can find that ability to wrestle along with his abilities to entertain, there won't be any stopping him at one point. So it was fun working with all those guys, you know, because they brought the best out of me. And you know, it's different experience because it's two completely different styles, but it was awesome either way.
We got a chat room question, and as mentioned, I said they ask them. I gotta ask them, so don't pick me up and choke slam me. When the roster was revealed for WWE SmackDown vs. Raw 2011, when they announced Vance Archer, there was a big laugh from The Miz and a comment, "You still here?" The chat member wanted to know if you had a reaction to that. I'm not sure where they were going with it, but that I got to ask.
That's fine. I laughed because neither one of those guys would say it to my face.
What do you think of...
People make a lot of comments when you're not standing right in front of them, and you know, the fact that they want to say that and act like I didn't earn my place, be a part of that roster, makes me laugh, and I know neither one of them would ever say that to my face. They might, you know, wait till I turn around and walk away and talk all the trash in the world, but, you know, they're not going to, they're not going to say it to my face, I'll put it that way.
We're on tonight opposite NXT, which is now gone internet as well. I guess they, you know, at any point, would you have been fine with them bringing you on an NXT type situation? And if so, if you had a choice of pros, anyone on the WWE roster, who would have been your pro and why?
if it's an opportunity to shine, I'll take any. Wow, I don't know. Who would I want to be my pro? You know, I don't know, man. Maybe like a Kane, just because I've respected him for so long and what he's done and the style that he's developed for himself, you know, from when he started to what he is now, and, you know, long overdue to be the champion for as long as he's been now, you know, for the time that he's been a part of WWE. So maybe a Kane, you know, he might kick my butt, but he might bring the best out of me as well.
You mentioned one big man, and I want to ask about another big man. On the September 24th edition of SmackDown, for one of the few times in your career, you were in with a very large person. What's it like being in a ring with the Big Show? Is it just one of those things you're like, okay, how do I work this? Or is it just, this is a cakewalk, he's my size, this will be fun?
My size, he's a Big Show. I'm a big guy, but he's a lot bigger than I am. It was just try to attack him and try to get the best out of it, and unfortunately I didn't.
On several occasions, you and Kurt took on the Dude Busters, who many feel like you guys, you and Kurt, didn't get a fair shake by WWE Creative. What were your thoughts on those matches? Because there were a couple weeks on Superstars and also on FCW TV that you guys were hooking up with them.
I thought they were great matches, regardless of the outcome and what was set up and what we had to be a part of. Kalen Croft, another guy I don't think should have been let go. Great matches. I think you can watch any of the matches that we had on television, FCW or whatever, and you're going to see nothing but the best.
Unfortunately, the pairing with you and Kurt was ended before the actual release, and we'll address that in a moment. Did Creative give you anything wise, whoever, Gearwitz, Michael Hayes, whoever was involved, did they, before this release come about, say to you, don't worry, big man, we got something coming for you, or what was left on your mind after the split?
You know, I mean, there's always thinking, there's always a process of trying to figure out what to do with different people at different times. If you look at the cuts that happened, there were 13 talents that were let go, 7 out of developmental, 6 off the main roster. And I know some of the writers were released as well. and it was more of a budgetary reasoning. There was a lot of us that like got let go, and I think it was simply a fact of we have to have this much space available. Who are we working with? Who are we not working with at the moment? And unfortunately, myself and several others got caught up in that. We're just not doing anything right now. They did have plans. There were thoughts. There was a process of trying to figure something out to do in a positive manner. I don't think that anybody just sits back and doesn't have something coming for them. So there were thought processes. There was something coming, unfortunately, because of budgetary reasons, that something got cut short.
All right, which leads to another question from Cindy Larson in Nashville. Lance, I was an attendee of the weekly pay-per-views in Nashville back in the day and want to know if you had any talks with Jeff Jarrett and Dixie Carter so you can save us from the craziness that is Hogan Bischoff. Whoa, okay.
I have not talked to anybody. I'm simply concentrating on family and moving forward. I literally came home and just spent a lot of time with my fiance because I was apart from her for so long. It was right around Thanksgiving, got to see my family that I hadn't seen in quite some time, my godson, his family. I've done a lot of that in the last few weeks. You know, that's really been my concentration, is reconfirming the relationships with the people who, you know, helped me and were there for me and were willing to, you know, step back and allow me to chase my dream. So that's really what I've been doing. So there's really been no conversations with any of the major companies in any sense, you know, because I've just been focusing on my family and my just putting one foot in front of the other right now.
I'm usually joined by a couple gentlemen who are trained wrestlers, one of them being Spug, who comes with a couple set questions. I'm not going to ask the one that he asked, one of them that he asks, but he does ask a standard question, which I'm sure gets asked all the time by you, but we'll label this for both promotions without, you know, getting anybody into serious trouble. The road's a rough place sometimes, a lot of traveling, and boys will be boys. Was there a particular rib or prank that was played on you, or you saw played, or you were part of, that stands out in your mind as going, damn, that's going in the Lance Hoyt book, if I ever write one, that you could possibly share with us?
A prank that was played on me? No.
Or you saw played on one of the other wrestlers? I can't really see anybody playing a prank on you without getting, thinking,
sure.
Like, I'm going to get choke slammed and through the
stage. I saw pranks happen here, there, and everywhere. They're not as prevalent as I think they used to be in the past. I saw a couple that were really good, and they, if I write a book, they'll end up in my book. But for now, they're just for me.
He's not stilling. I told you, Spug, he wasn't still. In the remaining moments here, fans want to go to your Facebook page, Lance Hoyt. You do have an email address there for promoters. Mm-hmm. To book you, has anybody made inklings to you about wanting Lance Hoyt on their shows, and you got any dates that we could possibly tease?
I definitely have a lot of things set up, with possibilities, guys I'm working with as far as negotiations go. I have a few shows that are set up, but I don't have enough information to push for them right now. So, you know, there's nothing, you said it just stands out that I'm saying this, you know, I have to talk about this right now. But yeah, I do have bookings. There are things that are in the future. You will start seeing me on the independent scene very soon. Just if you're interested in booking me, hit me up at lancehoyt@yahoo.com, or if you want on my Facebook or my MySpace, which are both under my real name, Lance Hoyt.
Yeah. Do you miss being Dallas or Shadow at all? Do you wish that WWE had gone with that instead of Vance Archer? Picked up Shadow. Before you answer, did you own the rights to Shadow? Is that copyrighted by Lance Hoyt?
In a certain degree, sure, yes. You know, but the character, they all have different times in the business that were positive. Shadow was a strong character for me on the independent scene with PCW, Professional Championship Wrestling, out of Arlington, Texas. Had some amazing, fun times working as Shadow. Dallas was a character that was initiated on TNA when I first got there, and obviously had a good running because Kid Cash and I were tag team champions for a bit. I just wanted a good opportunity to shine. I didn't care really what the name was. The name Vance Archer meant something to me, so I was okay with it. So as far as do I wish they'd gone with those names, no, it didn't matter to me as far as that was concerned. And I think sometimes people put too much value on a certain name, you know, and unfortunately for myself, I hadn't done anything so extensive in the business under any certain name that it was more prevalent to be that name. You know, I was still looking for that open door moment, that time to shine, and if it was Vance Archer, Dallas, Shadow, whatever, Lance Hoyt, it wouldn't have mattered to me. It was just looking for that opportunity to kick the door in and take that brass ring, as they say.
Oh, we wish you nothing but the best of luck and hope to see you either in a town near us or on TV again soon. As mentioned, he is available on Facebook, Lance Hoyt. You can find him, LanceHoyt@yahoo.com. Coming up after the break, we will get into WWE news, including the release of one of our personal favorite stars here, and we'll talk Monday Night Raw coming up on the other side of the break, hopefully with Mace if we can find him. Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back.
This is Mace with an announcement from the head of the Wild Talk Radio Network. With the goal in mind to keep ratings as high as they are with DJ Tim Stein and DJ Sir Rockin', the Wild Talk Radio Network hereby releases Maverick and Nick from the network. Just kidding, guys. This is the Wild Talk Radio Network, where friends get together to have fun and make fun of Mav.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forum. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown. It's the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
This is Mace, the overworked co-host of Wrestle Talk Radio, OWW Radio, Otaku Talk Live, the offside producer, Cindy's Planning Boy, Building Data, Advertising Guru, Bugs Bong Holder, Drink Runner, Omega's Transformer Record Keeper, and Back in the Book, all here on WildTalkRadio.com. If you decide to listen to a show that features a bit of the old-fashioned ultraviolence, people getting their heads kicked in, bones broken, and bloody crazy fights, then come on over and listen to Tap Out to Knockouts live in the archive section of WildTalkRadio.com.
Mate, it's not all about the bloody stuff and the ultraviolence. Hey, this is Spud from Tap Out to Knockouts. And if you want to hear the news, results, the technical side of MMA, check us out on wildtalkradio.com in the archives section. And oh yeah, we do have the bloody stuff.
And now I know.
And knowing is half the battle. Hey, what are you guys doing in here? Get back to sleeping.
I'm Al Snow, former WWE superstar, tough enough trainer, and just all around gadabout. When I want to talk or I want to listen to someone else talk, I go to wildtalkradio.com.
Thanks so much to Lance Hoyt for joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Alan Wojcik back here with you on Dimebag Darrell Tribute Night. Thanks again. Don't forget Lance Hoyt is available on Facebook, so friend him. Even if you look at the new format of Facebook and you're going, what the crap happened, dude? Go to cds.com, pull up 60 minutes from this past Sunday, and you'll see Mark Zuckerberg blink maybe four times during the interview, and he can explain why our Facebook pages all look weird. We will be delving into all things World Wrestling Entertainment, and we normally have him on here to talk TNA, but since he was practically had a 38 out and ready to blow a hole in his TV, we gave Mace the TNA time off, and we're happy he's here to delve into WWE and taking time away from his World of Warcraft. How are things going with that?
Currently on the way back to my buddy. I just died.
Oh, man.
Yes, I'm still playing. Got to keep going. Got to feed the addiction.
I'm sure of it. And most people fed their addiction this past Monday night on Raw and Friday on SmackDown. But before we get there, we had talked on this show a few months back of we know that WWE has an on-demand channel, and there were stories going around that there would be a full-time 24/7 cable-based WWE network. And WWE CEO Donna Goldsmith came out and said that those plans to launch the company, the TV network, have been pushed back at least 2012, so unless you saw the movie, we'll all be here hopefully, or even 2013. She revealed at the Reuters Global Media Summit, quote, it's taken us longer to galvanize troops and figure out where we're going. My guess is more like middle of 2012 or even the beginning in 2013 before we're ready to go forward. She added that WWE's cable model would likely be similar to Major League Baseball's network, with several companies owning a stake. She also confirmed that Linda McMahon has told her she does not plan a return to the company as CEO following her failed Senate bid in Connecticut. Goldsmith was also complimentary when asked to compare WWE talent to NBA players. For fans that don't know it, Ms. Goldsmith formerly managed global licensing at the NBA. She said, our talent is so wonderful and so articulate. To bring them to a Walmart manager's meeting is something we do often. They understand the business side of things, which is so different to an NBA player. I wouldn't bring the 12th guy on the bench with me to Walmart because I wouldn't know what he would come out of that. Also, I don't think they would want someone like Gilbert Arenas showing up, dropping guns on the desk. So if you were hoping for WWE Network programming, Mace, it's gone for another couple of years. Damn the man.
It doesn't really matter. They still have their WWE On Demand thing that they do on the website that makes a lot of money. So I don't see why they're trying so hard to get this network cable thing off the ground besides, you know, ad revenue money.
Well, I mean, I'm always curious because, I mean, they are a publicly traded venue, so some of their figures aren't released. Like, you know, there's certain, you know, from watching TV, you'll always hear the NFL Super Bowl commercial sold for this amount and that amount. I mean, they're obviously generating, I mean, their event in Atlanta is already selling like crazy for WrestleMania. Would you like to see at some point them do an event like WrestleMania or one of their normal pay-per-views on, I mean, they're a part of NBC Universal. Would it be interesting to do a test balloon to see how much media revenue and how much ratings would be from a, I mean, they're going to do Tribute to the Troops in a couple weeks on a Saturday once again when in America Saturday is a dead wasteland. Would that interest you to see one of the big pay-per-views be on a Sunday night after the NFL season ends or a Monday night like they used to do for SummerSlam? Would that be interest to you as a fan?
Well, if they want to use it as a test balloon to see how much of the marketing dollar they're going to get, as soon as Vince sees dollar number one, he's going to be like, this is brilliant, I love it, let's put it in the place. You know, frankly, that's the way his mind seems to work these days. Would I like to actually see it on, like, after a Sunday Night Football or something like that? Not really, unless it's coming to me for free. I don't really see it happening, so... sort of fan reaction of sorts.
Well, we just had Lance White on, who was Future Endeavored a few weeks ago, and if you watched Friday Night SmackDown this past week, you saw Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre take on Caval and the next contestant on Who Gets Future Endeavored, and one that I have to remove myself from because I'm a friend of the gentleman who performs as Montel Vontavious Porter. MVP, who's previously also known as Antonio Banks on the independent scene. Let me read this out, and then we'll get your reaction to it. And the fans listening as well can call in at 267-297-1397. MVP apparently asked for and received his release from World Wrestling Entertainment. As I mentioned, his final match for the company was, they're saying in this release that it was actually a qualified match for the King of the Ring, which, as we saw in the notes, is not true. MVP had not been used much as lately and often voiced his frustration on his Twitter account. He said on Twitter recently, "No need for alarm. I didn't get fired. I asked for and received my release. I felt it was time to go international and freshen things up." Responding to a fan a few minutes later, MVP added that WWE was not screwing him this time, but actually doing right by his honored request. For fans that aren't aware of it, MVP signed with World Wrestling Entertainment in 2005. Antonio Banks did at the time, and as we outlined with Bruno Sassi a few months back, he was integral in helping Antonio Banks create MVP, and he was called up to SmackDown in August 2006. He had won the U.S. Championship on two occasions and was WWE Tag Champion with Matt Hardy. Before we get to the obvious question that I'm sure everyone's asking, overall reaction, Mace, to hearing that MVP was cut? This was a money-making character. I mean, his WrestleMania debut was against Chris Benoit, and you had the football tunnel and the cheerleaders and everything, and it was an amazing character as a heel, but was it ever a bad thing in your mind turning him face? Should MVP had always been heel?
Well, personally, I think his face run was one of the better times he's had. You know, they built him up a way that they don't use very often, and that's become the sympathy face, using the old Mikey Whimperek approach, you know, having him lose so many times that when he finally gets that win, everybody's so happy for him that they forget everything that he's done. But as for his actual release, you know, the dude asked for his release. He's not happy with the company. He's not happy with the way he's being portrayed. Then if he thinks he can do better elsewhere, good luck to him.
He had it granted. I mean, sometimes we've heard Carlito say when he was in WWE, they're like, oh, I asked for my release so many times, and they told me, you know, shut up and keep working. This isn't normal company procedure, I'm guessing, to actually go to him and say, you want it? You got it, sir. Thanks a lot. Here's the WWE home game and a Christmas card.
You know, it doesn't happen often, but when they actually do sort of grant it and go, you know, hey, okay, we can see you're not happy. If you want to go, then by all means, just remember 90 days before you can go to TNA.
Which is the next question. I mean, he's saying in the thing, it's all that it's time to go international and freshen things up. Obviously, he can't take until Montavious Porter with him. He can take Antonio Banks since he owns that character name. And for fans that aren't aware of it, his real name is Alvin Burke Jr., who I've known since 2003 when he was at IPW Hardcore. And I'm happy he got released. I'm not happy because I don't get to watch my friend on TV. But, you know, we've had the 90-day clock going for Matt Hardy. Gregory Helms has had one for months. Haas and Benjamin have had one. Is he someone that TNA may be sitting there going, yeah, absolutely, heat 90 days. They've already called to South Beach and said, you know, come on in, Antonio Banks. We'll see you in 90 days.
Well, most definitely I'd be, if I was Dixie Carter or whoever's holding the checkbook, I'd be sitting there going, okay, what's a reasonable price to bring you in? Because he's a guy that I would love to see work against, you know, Douglas Williams, AJ Styles, Jay Lethal, to a small extent, Robbie E. You know, he's perfect for that that X Division spot. This is what happens when you have 2 hours sleep, people. So he's perfect for, he's a perfect suit for the X Division of TNA, and he would do really well in that environment. So definitely, if I was Dixie Carter, I'd be going, okay, give us a reasonable price because we're trying to watch our funding at the moment.
Considering that their recent tour of the United Arab Emirates didn't exactly go so well, if you read notes online about that one. I'm indifferent to it, because as I said, I'm happy he got what he wanted, but there's also the same thing of careful what you wish for, because now you got it. And it's just kind of weird, you know, to get the release, and at least he went out the way a lot of folks are supposed to. He was a part of a losing team. Looks like we have a new number one contender to the Intercontinental Championship, and it's a very familiar name. Yeah, that would be Kofi Kingston, who on SmackDown defeated Jack Swagger to become the number one contender again. Lack of creativity on WWE's part in your mind that we're going back to Kofi here? Could there be someone? Is there someone else on the roster that maybe you're going, I think that person's ready for an IC title shot, let alone a run with the belt?
I think this pretty much comes down to bad roster management. There's probably nobody else there at this point in time who'd be worthy of the Intercontinental title. Like as a run or even as a challenger at this point in time on the SmackDown brand. But then again, I could be wrong because I barely make it through half an episode of SmackDown these days.
And I'm not 100% sure because, as I said, we're a few weeks away. I believe December 19th is the WWE TLC pay-per-view, complete with very creative advertising, which still is hysterical to be bouncing channels in the U.S. and see these little stick figures, and I'm like, yeah, okay. The Edge versus Kane setup is already in place for TLC, which, shocking, it's a TLC match for Edge and Kane. I guess, as we mentioned on Rough Talk Radio, WWE, I believe, owns the copyrights to the letter T, the letter L, and the letter C, hence we had Full Metal Mayhem. Does this match interest you at all, going a couple weeks away? And you're like, yes, Edge can wrestle a hockey stick in a TLC match and make it look good, or are you already done in your mind with Edge and Kane?
I was pretty much done by the time that they announced it. I don't see much in this. Kane looks sloppy taking a standardized bump, let alone taking a bump through a table off a ladder or anything like that. Hopefully this ends with Edge just running straight through him nice and quickly, and then they can start promoting a face having the title on one of their shows. Try and balance it out, guys, for frag's sake.
Yeah, and speaking of the balance, Monday Night Raw this week opened with what many fans are calling the greatest opening in wrestling history, because Randy Orton did what all of us wanted to do to Michael Cole. If you haven't seen Monday Night Raw, Cole opened the program explaining his actions to Jerry the King Lawler at, you know, Jerry should actually be apologizing to me because you had to beat Jerry Lawler one more time and you come with a Miz and Joyous thing. And the general manager, of course, chimed in and said, no, 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 cease and desist. Everybody's got to shake hands, be nice. They bring Wharton out. They set up something later on with the Miz and Alex Riley. And, yeah, Michael Cole, RKO, the crowd goes ballistic, Mace.
Yeah, we were definitely popping for that when it happened. And I'm glad that they did that and were able to get Michael Cole off the commentary desk for the night. I was pretty much waiting for the, I'm sorry, you're sorry, we're all sorry, let's just continue as normal, instead of like, okay, the guy sitting next to you just cost you the title last week and you're not going to flip him around like a $2 whore.
Now, does this lead to what we've heard rumors either at OWW Genesis, the official forum of All I Want of Wrestling, or other sites that Cole is going to be transitioned out of announcing completely and possibly become a lackey, whatever you want to call him, for The Miz and Alex Riley? It seems that's the way they're going. I'm not sure how you view it, but that's kind of what the tea leaves seem to be saying. Does Cole have any? He handled himself pretty well on that promo with Lawler, but can you see him each and every week out there cheering the Miz on like he did?
Yeah, I could, unfortunately, only to drive us all insane.
It's an interesting setup, obviously, and we'll go from there. The other match is featured on the show, and if you were watching Monday Night Raw for wrestling, there was some. We had a couple debuts and a couple other matches. Daniel Bryan and the Bellas defeated Ted DiBiase and Maryse, and Teddy got the talk to the hand. I have a lot of single friends that would be interested in Maryse, so give us a call. The John Cena Attack the Nexus campaign is going on again, taking one of them out in the hotel room. We had the debut of a gentleman with Tyson Kidd, gotta keep company policies here, debuted with him to take on Harry Smith. That gentleman's name is Jackson Andrews. He is an FCW talent who had been doing some dark match stuff over the last few weeks on the Raw circuit.
He's a big boy.
Yeah, a couple of my friends were going, hey, it's Mason Ryder. I'm like, no, I've seen Mason Ryder on FCW TV. That's not him. Mason Ryder looks like a clone of Batista. No offense to Dave Batista. We do have brand new WWE Tag Team Champions. I can't believe I'm about to say this. Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov are your new champions, taking out Mark Henry, Yoshitatsu, the Usos, and Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel. One of the more interesting choices creative has made in recent memory to put the belts on these two gentlemen. I'm happy for them. The Santino character has gotten over really well, and the pairing with Kozlov seems to be going very well, obviously, enough to give them the Roman Gladiator tag team title.
Hey, Santino has been the butt of a joke for pretty much an entire year now. It's about time they rewarded the guy for what he's done for the company.
Yeah, I mean, he got slapped around by Jim Cornette and lived to tell the tale. And I'm sure we'll be asking Jim that. We'll talk about that in a moment or two. The setup of Tyson Kidd going solo now against Harry Smith. If you're creative, how long are you doing this? Does this go to Royal Rumble and die there in the Battle Royal, or do you see legs in TJ and Harry feuding?
I don't see legs in the feud, but I don't see them putting them back together anytime soon either. Because, you know, God forbid they actually have some tag teams in that company.
Yes, there's a missing poster out for them as well. Tag teams, we love you. And we hope to find you someday soon. Don't forget, we're still looking for Desmond Wolfe. If you see him, tell him his fans miss him very much. We had a debut of King Sheamus.
He got that wrong. It's King Fella.
Yeah. in one of the more interesting costumes that WWE has come up with, the Celtic King crown or whatever the heck. My 8-year-old happened to go, hey, he's got reindeer ears on. Like, it's Christmas, Juliet. What do you want? That's how we look at it. We addressed this last week and the idea of Sheamus even being King of the Ring. Some folks on the OWW Genesis forum thought it was a bad idea. Some say it's a good idea. Is this a setup just to get the King of Kings to come out of the Stanford office and go, Triple H, he's a king, you're a king, let's get it on for the crowns, and wear that Conan outfit you wore at WrestleMania a few years ago?
Yeah, this could be a battle of the very weird costumes. As Omega said in our little chat during Raw last night, he looks like he came straight from a LARPing convention. So, yeah, great costume choice there, guys. Absolutely brilliant.
We did have a Divas Championship defense. I couldn't really quite follow the announcing there because I usually mute when Lay Cool come out for commentary. We had Natty Neidhart take out Melina Perez, which I would rather have seen at a pay-per-view, but I guess being TLC, we may not see women unless we see Natty beat up Lay Cool some more. Or maybe we just have put Lay Cool up on a ladder and tell him, all right, the object is for you to try to get down and the Diva roster to keep your butt up there.
Yeah, you know, as you were saying with your interview with Nikki before, you know, it's quite interesting to see that TNA have decided to put a main event using the women on their television show. I would have liked to have seen this happen in WWE, but then again, they don't think women's wrestling happens unless you've got big bits of silicone in the chest.
Unless you have 46 or 44 inch long legs, a la Stacy Keibler. If your fans were thinking they're going, cool, the show ended with Randy Orton taking on Alex Riley. Boy, were you wrong. It was just a setup. Yeah, setup. I know I just said that. I'm going to go to grammar school and I'll be back in a few minutes. It was to set up the tables match for this pay-per-view. Harkening back to John Cena Sheamus last year. This story's going that this knee injury is legit and Orton is working through it. There's stories going, oh, it's work, it's something else injured. Put your money down or put yourself in creative for a moment with Miz. Because as I said, his first defense was Jerry Lawler and the house shows recently saw him versus Randy Orton versus Juan Cena, which I believe has since been swept under the rug by creative. But is this, we've asked this before, but we got to ask it again. If you're creative, which pay-per-view that's coming up WWE-wise, and we know Royal Rumble is January 30th, Elimination Chamber is February 27th, and then you got Mania, obviously, April 3rd. Do you keep Miz with the belt till Mania, or one of those three pay-per-views, either this coming one on the 19th, the Rumble, or the Elimination Chamber, his, you're doing good on Raw, kid, let's see how you draw at a pay-per-view. And if he doesn't draw well at the Rumble, does he lose it in the Chamber, or are we thinking way too far ahead here?
No, you're pretty much right on the money there. Initially, I said he was going to keep it till the Royal Rumble. But at this point in time, we've still probably got another couple of pay-per-view matches between John Cena and Wade Barrett to go through before we have Cena back in the title picture. So I could probably see them keeping the Miz on till the Chamber and then putting it on somebody else to lead into the match at Mania.
So you have a transitional champ to get to Mania, as opposed. I mean, he's getting over. Obviously, if the character wasn't over, they wouldn't have put the belt on him. Because when the guy gets the mic, he's one of the best in the roster right now. And of course, he has Captain Drunk Driver with him next to him, who apparently at FCW last time he was down there, my friend Jason Davis, who joins us from time to time here, said that A-Rod came out, went to walk to his car, and actually turned to some fans who were waiting and said, all right, he wants to go to the local bar. So take that for what you want. This is the third week, or as many weeks, that we've had CM Punk on the microphones, and we hope he gets his hip healed up so we can finally get to Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk. Your thoughts on Punk as a commentator? I mean, he held his own Ring of Honor, but now it's a different audience, and you're exposed to millions of people as opposed to a couple thousand that are buying DVDs. How's Punk doing in your eyes? If you can give him a letter grade A to F.
Dude was on fire on Raw this week. This week alone, he'd be getting a high B, B-plus area from me. Absolutely hilarious. Some of the best comments for a color guy that I've heard in quite a few years. No offense to Jerry the King Lawler, but Punk's just outshining him left and right at the moment.
So is Lawler just the generation gap is showing there, that Punk's around our age and Jerry is the age he is? Is Jerry's getting a little lost, you think?
Oh, I don't think Jerry's getting lost. It's just that I think now might be the time where we see Jerry the King Lawler, the color commentator, go bye-bye, and we get him as Jerry the King Lawler, the knowledgeable play-by-play man, because that's what they really need to fill. I'm sorry, Michael Cole is a absolutely horrible play-by-play guy. He spends too much time talking his own opinions and everything else rather than actually calling the match. Josh Matthews might as well have been a rock on Monday night, because I can't even remember him saying or doing anything for 9/10 of the show.
And you put over Bryan Danielson, and that was about it of memory.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it's time that we have Jerry turn around and go, you know what, I'm going to keep my funny persona on the mic as a commentator, but this time I'm going to bring my experience from the ring in and become the new play-by-play guy, because, frankly, we need to find a reason to get rid of Michael Cole.
And we found a reason for Wade Barrett to have issues. It looks like, for those of you that were hoping Nexus was going away, you kind of got your wish there to end the show, I guess, after Marky Mark and the lack of funkiness just took out everybody, to see Barrett basically out there alone. I brought this up with my friend Michael Gorey, who was on earlier, and we thank Screaming at the Silence for stopping by. A little weird to have your world title be secondary to John Cena versus Barrett and the Nexus. I mean, I understand if Omega would say, well, it is John Cena, he is Superman. Bothers me a little bit. Does it bother you at all that the world title is secondary to Cena Barrett?
Of course it bothers me. You know, the world title's supposed to be your main feature. It's supposed to be the main event item of your show. And if you're not getting that over, then, you know, you might as well have sent your champion over to SmackDown or NXT this week to do a promotion over there. Because if you're not showcasing the belt, what's the point of trying to build it up?
Yeah, and we're working on trying to get CM Punk a merchandising deal with Diet Coke. And a couple weeks in a row, we've had Diet Coke spillings and issues, so we wish Punk all the luck.
We all know it's going to be Diet Pepsi, because he's already endorsed them.
Yeah, that damn Pepsi tattoo, and last week a Coke Cabana shirt, last night a Charles Manson shirt. I mean, how's he getting these by creative, other than he's just walking out there with his jacket going, all right, I'm not, what are you wearing under there? Nothing, just a shirt. Okay.
I reckon that's probably how he's getting away with it, actually, is that he's walking in with the jacket done up. What are you got on this week, Punk? Nothing.
Yeah, I got a nice little ensemble. I'm wearing Donna Karen, damn it.
I'm wearing my $15 jacket with the tag still on it, and I'm wearing a stand-up for WWE t-shirt. Not looking shifty at all here.
Yeah, don't mind this other item here. Not whatsoever.
Actually, while I've got that, can I bring this up for you? I read last week's edition of Raw, a fan rocked up decked out in Hulk Hogan Hulkamania gear.
Oh, yeah.
Told by security that he had to take the gear off and get a... I think they might have provided him with it, or he had to buy it, I'm not quite sure, a stand-up for WWE t-shirt to cover his Hulk Hogan gear.
Oh, yeah. That was interesting, needless to say, but I'm interested in where you're going.
Oh, I just figured while we're talking about CM Punk getting away with whatever he wants to wear, it seems the fans aren't allowed to wear whatever they want anymore.
It's common to see. You go to any sporting event, you're going to, if you wear, I know from going to Boston Red Sox games here at Tropicana Field in Tampa, Florida, that if you wear a shirt that says Yankee Stuck or something along those lines, security will ask you to turn your shirt inside out. But to be told you're dressed like Hulk Hogan, brother, you need to go change.
Well, think about this. How many times have you looked into the crowd, even in the big Monday Night Wars era, how many people did you see in a crowd with NWO shirts on or WCW Monday Nitro shirts on in the Raw crowd? Yet they never mention anything about that. They never told them, oh, change your shirt or else we're going to kick you out the door. But mind you, this guy in the Hulk Hogan stuff was like in first row, so he would have been probably hard camera side. Maybe they could have just said, okay, look, we'll just change you off hard camera side. Because they've had guys rock up in all sorts of outfits before, and they still let them on TV. I don't know why suddenly the immortal bald spot is the big, oh my God, he's the enemy, we can't say he exists.
Yeah, I don't understand it either, and... I guess WWE wants to be the fashion police. Don't understand at all. Or at least the guy got a shirt out of it. It's how he can look at it.
Yeah, stand up for WWE one. I would have taken it home and burnt it.
It's one of those. It's a tricky situation. As I said, you know, you're being told what you can and can't wear. What's next? I mean, TNA has had, and it's no secret for fans who watch Impact, the majority of the signs you do see at Impact, they're TNA made. The TNA street team kids make them. So if you go and, wow, such great artwork by that little 7-year-old, that's how it got made, guys. Before we wrap the evening up completely, let's say I want to thank everybody for coming on here and being a part of the show. I'm not the only one on this network, and I get people all the time who go like, why are you putting the other shows over? And I was like, because I'm a part of a really damn cool network. And it doesn't take a moron to figure that out. And before we get to that network, I just want to put over the fact that thanks to everyone that came out to the 2010 Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup in either Brooksville on Friday, last Friday night, or Saturday night in Crystal River. The new horror, Sammy Callahan, is your 2010 winner. He defeated the late addition to the tournament, the gentleman who replaced Ricochet, the FIP world champion, John Moxley, who had one of the hardest hitting matches before he even got it with Sammy Callahan. He had to take on the anarchist Eric Cannon, and the dude bled the hard way. He was cut open. We couldn't figure out if he was cut open on Cannon boots from a baseball slide or the baseball slide putting him into the guardrail. But at one point, Eric Cannon was hitting Moxley with lariats, and his left arm was, it almost looked like he had a red sleeve underneath his shirt. So thanks to Sal Aomi, Ron Namy, Naftali, for Lenny Leonard for putting on an awesome event, and I couldn't have been more gracious to be a part of that event for the 8th consecutive year. Last week's show is available for podcast on owradio.com, on wildtalkradio.com, we're on iTunes, we're on Click Wrestle, which is one of our big sponsors, and some other stuff is archived on wildtalkradio.com. Is there OTL tomorrow night, and can you give info on what you may be talking about besides midgets?
Well, yes, there shall be a show tomorrow. As what we are going to be doing, good question. I do have some geek news lined up. Probably going to be a lot of World of Warcraft Cataclysm talk, as myself and Spug avid players of the game, which means Omega gets to have a good old-fashioned nap time. Other than that, you pretty much got to tune in to find out what we talk about. We do not plan this stuff in advance. We just sort of have stuff on in reserve. So it's the second last show of the year. We're doing this one, but then we're doing next week, and then we're going to blow up the OTL studio and build it fresh for 2011.
That's an interesting motive. This is a time where he won't talk on our show and we talk wrestling here, but he will come on to publicize stuff. So we go to the disembodied voice of Sir Rockin. Will there be anything goes tomorrow night, Magic 8-Ball?
It's never on Wednesdays. Anyway.
Thursday, sorry.
Most likely not.
Been a long day.
Most likely not. We'll be back in 2011 with Anything Goes. That's the working plan as of now, but we may pop on during the holidays. We'll
all right. Does Mav still have his privileges on the network, or is he under double secret probation?
IRO 6 p.m. Eastern. Move on.
All right. Now, can we move on to CB Radio? Did we have a snoring by the Godfather this past week?
No, but we had Mace and the weather updates and Spud going for Legos.
Wait, say that one more time.
Well, we had Spug and Maze join myself, Rob, and Will, and Subway. And at about 1 a.m., Spug got his car in the snow and went for Legos to Walmart for monster trucks. Right, Maze?
You are correct,
okay,
sir.
Yes, but before we go to the CB Radio, before then, myself, because I'm the producer of Mason Spug, we're going to go live talking UFC 124. It's not going to be a show. It's not a show. But if you like UFC talk, you'll hear us go, "Oh, my God. And what a punch. What a knockout." More like Mason Spug doing that. But we're going to have the stream live as we're talking on Skype, watching UFC 124. And then it'll be CB Radio.
Will there be a countdown show, or is... we'll wait till Saturday and figure out then.
Work complication has put that show on hiatus for now.
Damn.
It's a long story.
I'm sure if you find him online, the PD Top 20 countdown with Trey Dog. And as always, Sunday night on this network. This Sunday we'll be back to the normal 10 p.m. time because no pay-per-view. Sir Rockin will be producing Tim Stein, Mace, Will, Omega, anybody else that wants to show up. If you're in our chat room, you've noticed it's a brand new website. Looks awesome, thanks to Sir Rockin. And on this website, I'm not alone. Mace and Spug wear many hats, and they change them off each and every week, each and every hour almost, it seems. Mace has got two different podcast situations he's a part of. The first one is Bashing the Books. For fans that are new to our show who joined us last week from Peterson Cup night and decided to stick around at night, tell them what Bashing the Books is all about if they didn't hear the commercial during the show.
Basically, Bashing the Books is taking select readings from my own comic book pull list for the week. I go through the stories, give you an opinion on what I have read and if it's worth your money or not. But unfortunately, due to World of Warcraft Cataclysm, I have decided to put the show offside for this week because, well, I'm going to be playing the crap out of this game. It cost me $110, so I'm going to play it for as long as possible.
That's some craziness. I'm sure it will. We want to thank Sir Rock and our producer for making us sound good each and every week.
Hey, can I? I have two plugs.
Oh, wait, we also have to plug the Tap Outs to Knockouts, don't we?
Well, we'll get to that one, but you forgot one live show. 7 p.m. Eastern, Life is Callous with Johnny
Casimir. That's right, because I met Larry Dallas this past weekend at the Peterson Cup. Johnny Casimir and Larry Dallas, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, had John Wester Ship, the former Flash, on.
Yeah, and last Sunday, Johnny Callis was joined by his cousin as a co-host, and they talked to Reverend Bob Levy formerly of many local radio shows and the Howard Stern Show. He's a stand-up comedian.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. I think DDP is lined up for a future episode, so tune in for Life is Callous, 7 p.m. Eastern, on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Yes, I apologize, Johnny Cashmere. You can beat me up later. Tap Out to Knockout seems to be getting over pretty well, Mace. Give some fans some info if they haven't heard your pretty cool commercial.
Basically, if you like mixed martial arts, whether it be the UFC, Strike Force, or any other mixed martial art outfit out there, we are covering it. We try to cover every show. Probably the next upcoming podcast will feature our reactions and recap of UFC 124 if you don't get to hear our comments live that night. We also do have an interview lined up with the owner of MMAJunkie.com, and we shall have that interview, which will probably feature me going, what do you guys have for newbies? Because as much as I like UFC, I'm still very new to sort of how everything works, what the rules are and whatnot. I'm more the common man when it comes to the show. Also, you can find us on Twitter at TapOuts2KO on the good old Twitter, and from TapOuts to Knockouts on Facebook.
Yes, and if you like all the great programming here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, well then, we're going to do something very special in the coming weeks. It's called the WTR Awards. We're nominated. We're going to have a big show, big surprises, best radio show, best call-in, best segment of a show, best argument, all fun stuff. We're promoting ourselves, the WTR Awards. Go us! And if you have nominations, go to rockandsock at wildtalkradio.com. I want to know what you would think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you more about it later.
Gotcha. Thanks to Siraka for making it sound so well, Mace for stopping by and taking time from World of Warcraft, Spug for not plowing himself into cars and sharing his story of going to see Damage Plan, Michael Gorey, Stu Wire, the Screaming at the Silence, and our two super cool guests, Lance Hoyt, and she told me in a break, and I'm going to rub it in everybody's faces, Nikki Rocks was the first person we interviewed. No one else got to her. Thanks to Sean McCaffrey at WSU for getting her. WSUWrestling.com is the place to be. Next week, he will be here. He will not be live. He will be pre-taped. But if you want to get your questions in, radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. The legend, yes, I get to use legend here and mean it, Jim Cornette will be our guest next week. Get your questions at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com by next Monday, 11 p.m. Eastern, and you will possibly hear your question asked. If it's involving Ring of Honor, the Midnight Express 20th Anniversary book, any DVDs done for kayfabe commentaries, if you send in stuff in for the 2U shoots and you got locked out, we'll ask your question here on the show next week. And it will be in tribute to Jim Cornette. We're going to be doing some old school Southern rock. Thank you so much for being here on Dime Bag Darrell Tribute Night. And hope you throw on some Pantera tomorrow and some John Lennon as well, as it's the 30th anniversary of his passing. I'm Al Wojcik. Thanks for listening to All in World of Wrestling Radio. Have a good night. It's nothing dangerous. I feel no pain.